Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should be checking out in yours. I'm one of your hosts, Drew, or Quad 9, and here's my other host, Nikhil.
What's going on, everybody?
And we've got another great guest this week. Well, I say week, we don't record weekly. But he also does a more frequent podcast than our own, but it's Usman Jamil.
Hey, so I don't even know if that means much, because lately we just don't record much anymore. We just haven't had time.
Very happy to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
This is going to be a part of our community spotlight series. This will be a kind of interview with Usman. We're going to talk about kind of his background with Cube and then get into some some topics regarding the format. So definitely super excited to hear your opinion on a lot of stuff. And then I think we decided before the cast we're going to go over a couple of the spoilers that came out.
Oh, yeah.
The giant leak that now has people in trouble, apparently. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what to add here. They pulled the art for Strip Mine, like, through Game Informer. They were like, which I thought was interesting, they actually acknowledge it. They didn't just go, okay, let's ignore the fact that it got spoiled. They were like, oh, this got spoiled, but here you go anyway. So here's Strip Mine.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, apparently some people are... I think some people got suspended for a while, like 6 months, like 2 years or something.
Yeah, that's not so good when you stuff like that. But anyway, apart from all of that, let's get into kind of, for the people who may not be too familiar with you, you are a Cube enthusiast. You are partnered with Gathering Magic, I believe, writing and do some videos from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
You've been hosting a cast called The Third Power with Anthony Avitolo for how long has that been?
I know it was around Scars because he sold me on Stoneforge Mystic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember like not many people were running Stoneforge Mystic at the time. When did Scars come out?
2009?
2010? No,
it's 10. Wow, so it's been like 5 years? Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. 11, yeah.
Because I remember we were talking about it on our pilot episode, which is rough because pilots are so rough and we're just... I think I remember saying good times on it a bunch of time, and Marshall was just like, dude, don't do that. That's terrible. I was like, okay, all right. I don't want to make Marshall mad. But I remember it was 2010. So, yeah, I remember he sold me on that. I'm like, all right, so sort of Body and Mind's coming out, so sure, I'll try it out, and ended up being stupid. It's like probably one of my favorite cards in Cube now, but... Yeah, so about 5 years now, which is really strange. Time flies.
Well, we should probably talk about where you're from and how you got started in MTG and just kind of like what drew you towards the game.
I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, so like Midwest. What brought me to Magic? My brother taught me Magic sometime around like Fallen Empires. And like revised, I remember when you could get Fallen Empires packs for $1 everywhere because they were massively overprinted everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, they were like you could go to pretty much any game store and they would just have Fallen Empires packs for like $1 because they were. I think that was the set when they realized printing to demand, but I think they like way overshot it and were like, all right, so here's Fallen Empires. Then Fallen Empires was kind of. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they just overprinted it, and you could find them everywhere. But that's kind of when I started, around that time period. So I've been playing for a while. The weird thing is when I started Magic, part of it, part of it stays the same, part of it just kind of evolves. But I remember being, like, very much like a white, weenie, like, aggro player back in the day. And then... around the tail end of Urza's Saga block, like, I had started to lose interest in the game, and, like, most of my friends were moving out, moving away from the area, and then it was kind of like Mercadian Masks didn't help. It was kind of, I didn't honestly think it was bad, it just didn't do much to bring me back. I was like, alright, so let's see what's going on with Magic. what's this? And I think I got some packs of it. Of course, I didn't get anything worthwhile, but it was like, okay, I don't care. I'm done. And then just kind of drifted away from the game. I sold off my cards, but I thankfully didn't have anything that was worthwhile. Like, I didn't sell, like, my black border blue duels for, like, $5 or something.
Mm-hmm. All the horror stories you
hear. Oh, yeah. I remember selling, like, I think most of my collection for, like, $200, but, yeah, I just didn't really have anything. It was mainly just, like, Armageddons and junk, but I'd never really had anything really crazy. So I just, you know, sold that off, and then every once in a while I would lurk the Wizards site, you know, over the years and kind of peek in. And that's the weird thing is, like, when you're peeking in, you tend to notice, like, the high points. Like, you know, I saw Spirit Monger. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, what is this nonsense? And then, you know, just kind of lurked in and out, and then, you know, saw the thing on WotC's front page for the Betrayers pre-release at, you know, whatever store, and then went there, did okay. Like, I never really drafted much. There was a store we went to where people were just kind of, like, cheating a whole bunch. Like, we nicknamed it, like, Sealed Sneak because people just sneak stuff in a bunch. It was pretty bad. Although, honestly, I don't know if it was sour grapes at being me being bad or... But I think it was probably a little bit of A and a little bit of B, so who knows. But, like, I did okay at the pre-release and talked to this guy who was nice, and, you know, he said, yeah, so we have this, every week at the store, we have this thing called Friday Night Magic, and then we do drafts. And I was like, okay, that seems cool, sure. And then, you know, did it. And, of course, I was terrible at the beginning because, you know, when you first start drafting, you're terrible. And then eventually it became slightly less than terrible. Probably just, like, slightly pretty bad, but, you know, that's just okay, I guess. I don't know. I'm probably just being self-deprecating, but, but, you know, I just, like, got more experienced in it and started getting more into limited. Also because at the time when I got back in the game, the metagame was literally affinity and tooth and nail. It's like, all right, let's see what's going on with type two, because that was what standard was called back in my day when... Whatever. It's just like, we're seeing this, I'm like, all right, so what's going on? Affinity. Okay, that looks awkward. And tooth and nail. And that's the entire meta, and like big red or something. I'm like, this seems stupid. I'm just going to draft. It's like, this is... So that's kind of how I got back into Magic. And I think, honestly, Cube probably kept me from quitting out of probably just sheer apathy. I'm just like, this, I probably would have quit a while ago. If it wasn't for that, and now, well, here I am talking, rambling about Cube in 2015.
Mm-hmm. So,
Were you playing any other card games then, or was that just like Magic the only one going on for you?
Magic was the only one I really cared about. I remember, like, you know, the magazines like Inquest would always talk about the other card games, like, you know, I forget, what was it, like Vampire the Masquerade? Or whatever. I remember that was a popular one. But I remember just like seeing them. I just never cared enough to go and seek them out. But that was pretty much it. Just that was the only card game I'd played was Magic. And I was like, this seems interesting, but never really bothered to check out the others.
Mm-hmm. And then going back to, you said, you kind of came back into Mirrodin and were checking stuff out. When was the first time that you were introduced to Cube? Was it around that time? Pardon me if I had, misheard you slightly.
Oh, no, I actually didn't say anything about Cube. So
okay, sorry.
It was, oh, no worries. So there was a local forum in St. Louis, which kind of had, you know, it's kind of like, and I'm assuming most, from what I've seen, most Magic sub, you know, forums and whatnot tend to have kind of a similar structure. It was kind of like general news, and I think they were kind of segmented by stores. Because, like, St. Louis, I don't know if, like, St. Louis is a lot of urban sprawl, and it's kind of weird when I go to other cities. Like, our downtown is actually kind of, like, there's not really much going on with downtown, but there's a lot of, like, suburban sprawl.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, like, I usually joke to people that it takes half an hour to get to everywhere. Like, it, you know, hey, it takes me half an hour to go from so-and-so to so-and-so. But there's a lot of urban sprawl because of that, and because a lot of the stores tend to be pretty spread out. You know, it's not exaggeration. Yeah, there's probably several stores I can think of where it's like half an hour to 45 minutes between them. And because of that, a lot of the stores and I don't know if this is still the case, tend to have kind of, not necessarily cliques, although I think I had felt that at the time, that there were cliques, but it's kind of groups that would kind of stick within their particular, no, I guess clique. There we go.
Sure.
Occam's razor. That's the right word, so let's use it. So at the time, there was a store called Ogre's Games in St. Louis, and it had a lot of vintage aficionados. And they had a close, you know, in their, I forget if they posted it in the Ogre's forums or in the vintage forums, but they talked about this thing called Cube at the time. And I remember just like lurking them because I wasn't really, you know, I didn't really know those people, but I just thought it was really interesting. You know, just kind of looking at them like, this looks, you know, essentially just designing your own limited format with the best cards in Magic. I was like, this is, looks insane. But, you know, I never drafted it because I didn't know those people and I wasn't, you know, really didn't have an in with them or anything. So, you know, again, I just kind of lurked what was going on. And then I think it was at the Lorwyn pre-release or one of the Ravnica pre-releases. Yeah, it was a Ravnica one, I think. Yeah, I think it might have been Ravnica or Time Spiral, but they were all there and they were drafting. And we were just, like, watching them cube draft and thought it was in, you know. Do you remember the card Ghostlit Stalker?
I do not, unfortunately.
Spoiler alert, it's not that good, but I'm gonna bring it up on Magic Cards and Info. Okay, Ghostlit, oh man, they were all cycle. I have to scroll down. Ghostlit Stalker. One black mana for a 1/1 creature spirit. Spend 4 and a black, tap. Target creature discards 2 cards, activate this blah blah sorcery. Channel, which you can, you know, discard it as a spell, essentially. 5 black black, discard Ghostlit Stalker. Target player discards 4 cards. Activate this only in any time you could cast a sorcery, blah, blah, blah. And for some reason, that card stuck out. You know, just seeing a draft format where that's a card, you know, it's like, this is really cool. Granted, that card really isn't that good in Cube.
Something unique, yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking, like, that's just cool. And Evan Irwin posted when he was doing the Magic show on the regular, you know, he started championing Cube around that time as well. He did a video called Gleaming the Cube when he was doing the Magic show. And it's kind of weird, like, half of it was talking about Cube, and half of it was talking about, like, Lorwyn spoilers. So when I would post, like, link to people in, like, articles that I've written about how that got me into Cube, it's kind of weird. Nobody really complained about it, although maybe nobody actually clicked on it or cared. But that's probably a possibility. But, like, you know, it would be, you know, them talking about what Cube is, you know, how it's different from, like, Type 4 or whatever, like, these things, you know, you might want to check this out. And then half of it was them talking about Timber Protector and stuff. But it, I think that's what kind of got me really interested was, you know, I think Evan Irwin did a thing. There was an article on SCG from somebody named Sam Gomersall, but I never really read that and I didn't care. Because, yeah, I had no idea. And I was like, Here's this article. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's look at this. All right, sure, whatever. I never read it, and it just, but like him and Tom LaPilli at the time, you know, like that's how he got his gig at WotC was through, you know, Cube design, and stuff like that just kind of like got me very interested in what Cube was. And granted, because I, you know, like I said, I didn't really have an in with the people who had their Cube, I decided to make my own. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those kind of like, you know, like a punk rock, you know, kind of ethos of, you know, just like DIY. You know, if there's something I want to do and, you know, there's not really the support for it, then I'm just going to do this myself. And that's what I just decided to do. I'm like, I'm just going to build my own cube. I remember some of the earliest, like when I was designing my cube, just building around, because there wasn't much content about Cube. Like, there was a site called Snazorama, which had some guy who had a cube list. And I think recently it started not updating. But I remember for a while it was one of the only cube lists, like him, Tom LaPilli, Evan Irwin. But there weren't really many. There was obviously no cube tutor at the time. I don't think even, I think Salvation's Cube Forum was either dead or terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I remember just like it had some real bad stinkers when they kind of put a cumulative list. I think it was I don't think it was around at the time. I think actually Gavin Verhey created the first like thread for Cube on that sub forum. But all these things, I'm just like, I'm just going to do this myself. And when I built my first Cube list, I remember having to like simulate an 8-person draft by myself. I did it once and I'm just like, this is no, this is terrible. And you know, it's kind of, that's how I kind of got into Cube. Just, there was another video, you know, Evan Irwin, he was kind of championing it for a while. And I know a lot of other people got into Cube because of him as well. But I remember he did an update around like Shadowmoor, and you know, he did this like huge video about what he did to his Cube and like how he configured. I'm like, this is, wow, this is really cool. And stuff like that, I think, is what really got me into designing my own Cube. So that's my long answer.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was excellent. And how long was it when you know you said you didn't have too much of a guideline in terms of like building your cube, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
How did you? I mean, now when we make cubes, we can go on CubeTutor, or like you're saying, we have all these resources now. Pardon me. How did you? You know, when did you finally find out what was, quote unquote, like actually balanced, or what was, I don't know. How would you ask that question? I'm drawing a blank here.
Oh, it's no worries. I kind of know what you're getting. I know what you're getting at though. Like, yeah. How did you find something you kind of settled with? Like, yeah. How did you, yeah. I honestly don't know. I was thinking of that. Like, I don't think and that's one of those things, like even with my cube now, I always feel like I'm making changes, and that's why I'm awful with updating my cube tutor list.
Mm-hmm.
There's like someone to look at and like, this guy doesn't update his cube ever. But I pretty much weekly, because I do cube night on Tuesdays,
mm-hmm.
at the store. Shout outs to Wizards Wagon in St. Louis, because that's where we do our cube drafts. But almost always on Monday and like early Tuesday, I'm making changes, if not during the rest of the week. But most of the time, if you look at that cube tier list, no one would know. And I think I've just been bad about it, to be completely honest. Like, I did a huge change to my Popper Cube, but I never got around to making an actual change to it. But I remember it took like a few months, it felt like, for me to make small changes and to kind of compile a list. I didn't really know as much of what I was doing in terms of just making changes. And a lot of it was kind of discovery. And I think that's one of the things that's really interesting about cube design, is also in terms of just designing a format, as well as just kind of progression in terms of what a cube is and like personal discovery. I remember when I was first designing my cube, I was literally looking in, I forget if Magic Cards at Info was up at the time, but literally looking at all the white 2-drops of all time, not just like for commons or whatever, just looking at literally everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was the first list to use Soltari Trooper. I think you tend to see it more nowadays, but I remember I was the first one to really use it. And just because I was just searching, it's like, all right, 2-drops in white, go. And I was like, ah, oh, geez, look at all this. And then eventually found that. I'm like, wait, this seems cool. It's a 2-power shadow creature. Yeah, let's do this. And then I think more people started using it since then, but I think it was one of those things where it just, but I don't know if I ever, I guess for lack of better terms, I'd say maybe it was a few months until I got a list. I was like, yeah, let's do this. And mm-hmm. then settled on that. I think that probably maybe a few months or so.
Huh. Very cool.
I remember, like when the first Magic Online cube, which looking back is just in some ways better, in some ways worse, obviously, but I just took that list to start off with, and I put in the cards that I had and proxied some other ones and made packs. And I just would sit there and I'd just look at packs. I'd just take out the best card and then take out the best card and take out the best card. I'd get down like the last 5 cards and I'd be like, man, these cards are bad.
Yeah.
And like, I'd just be like, okay, I don't own this card. I'm not going to get it. And just kind of cut them like that. And,
I was trying to think of like Rite of Ruin. There were some real bad stinkers. I remember
Surgeon, which I think you could sculpt a game in which that card would be good, but it was really hard at
yeah.
that time.
I mean,
then, like, they had Sheldrake Isle, which is an amazing card, which they saw fit to cut later.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I have similar feelings or similar memories. I remember my first cube build had Blood Moon in it, and I was like, while this card seems okay, it doesn't really translate from constructed because half of the decks are just playing like 60% basic lands.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was in a Moto Cube draft, like I played Magus of the Moon just because I had no non-basics. I'm like, well, if I drafted a bad mana base, so did you. I was like, wow, I have no non-basics. I was like, okay, sure, go ahead. It was, yeah. Didn't you post on Salvation about Blood Moon recently?
Yeah, I did recently, ironically. I was like, because I have one, and they're like $1 million now. I was, I think the conclusion was that Magus, if you're going to have that effect, Magus is probably the better card to run. And then it also, I think, depends on how many land cycles you play in your cube. Like, I play an absurd amount of non-basic lands, and I have a couple pet cards. I have a Tabernacle in my cube just because...
Honestly, that seems fine.
Yeah, I like it in the Braids smokestack kind of strategy, just kind of like choke your resources out and eventually kill you later.
Yeah.
But just like I play an absurd amount of non-basics, so it's that's why I originally had the effect in, but it's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, so you said that you started the third power in 2010. Has it been you and Anthony the whole time?
Yeah, it's been pretty much us. Like, every once in a while, like in the beginning, we would do some Pauper Cube episodes with Adam Staborski, but I don't know. It's pretty much just been me and Anthony just kind of doing the podcast from, you know, the beginning. I'm so surprised it's been 5 years. Wow, that's crazy.
So did you meet him? How long have you known him? When did you meet him?
So one of the first cube places I'd really gone for discussion was the MTG Salvation Cube forums. And I think I had the idea of doing a cube podcast for a while. I think I was, you know, on a pretty huge podcast kick at the time. I was working jobs where I would just listen to a bunch of podcasts pretty much nonstop. And you know, Limited Resources was one that I really listened to a lot of. And it got me to think, you know, there really isn't much like a cube podcast, or, you know, I figure that, you know, that could be interesting. I didn't really have like a kind of mission statement or anything. It was just kind of something I wanted to do. Just thought, you know, it'd be nice to have. And Anthony was one of the regulars on that forum, and I forget what happened. I think he was going to go to a SCG Open. Or I think I just kind of like, this guy's got a good head on his shoulders. Let's make a cube podcast. And, you know, and we just like talked back and forth, like, you know, we just did a bunch of like IMs or whatever. And I'm like, do you want to do this? I don't even know. I'll probably see if I can find the forum thread, and it'll just be awkward. It's like, hey guys, let's want to make a podcast. I don't even know. But eventually, I think he was living in like Oklahoma or something at the time. And he actually did I think he top eighted the Legacy Open with Goblins. And like, he had to drive back home. I just remember like thinking, you know, talking for him for like maybe 5 or so minutes, or, you know, maybe like 10 minutes, and then he had to leave. But okay, RE podcast. Wow. That's some pod. Did I just call it podcast? Really? I just podcast. What is wrong with me? 2010. So it was July 22nd. Is this going to let me go to the second page? There we go. So I first said my cell phone. Let's find out. We're finding out the history. So I sent a message on June 15th. I think we were probably texting each other just about cube. Blah, 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 blah. I'm not sure when. Okay. So maybe just texting him just to start, just talk about whatever, just do a cube draft. I'd be totally down to do a podcast if there's any way I could do it online, blah, 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 blah. So that was around July, and I think eventually it just kind of happened. Let's see how long this conversation thread went on for. 2 days. All right, so that happened over the course of 2 days. So there we go. 2 days. And eventually, you know, we just I forget when we actually started. It was probably not long after that. I could probably look it up, but I don't know. I'm lazy. I probably should look it up.
It was around Scars. So.
I remember it was when that box set came out. Whatever, the From the Vault Relics or something.
Relic, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was like, here's a sword. Here's a new sword. I'm like, all right, sure. I'll try it out. This looks cool. Okay. And then just did that from there. So I think that's how that kind of started. Nothing, like I said, there wasn't like some huge mission statement of, you know, I want to have, you know, something for, you know, just, it wasn't really some kind of huge mission statement of how I wanted to have it created, but it's just like, I think this would be a good idea. Let's do this. I know like, Magic Box, I think essentially kind of became a podcast. I think like Tristan and Kyle would have conversations, just like talk about Cube. And eventually there's like, you know, let's just make this a podcast. And kind of, it felt like it grew kind of organically from that. I don't know if, whatever the Mike Flores BDM podcast, yeah, whatever top eight.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like, I don't know if that had kind of a similar origin story, but I don't know. I don't think it did, but I haven't really paid much attention to it. So there's my half answer for that one, at least. Sweet. At least I know how the third power started. It all is through IMs on MTG Salvation's Cube Forum. And then, you know, we started talking more and eventually kind of got into a rhythm of, you know, just wanting to do at least for every set review. And, you know, real life has kind of gotten in the way at times. So we haven't probably recorded as much as we necessarily want to. I know like last summer we were just like, yeah, we're going to record a whole bunch of podcasts. And we did like one or something just because something happened. It's like, all right, well, we got that one. And nowadays we're just kind of do a set review and then like, that's about it. But, you know, it's still fun. Like,
oh, no, it's excellent. I enjoy listening to you guys talk about Cube.
It's kind of funny. Like, I remember thinking about it, like when I would do like draft videos for, you know, Star City and Gathering Magic. I remember just like listening to my voice on that. And it's just like so much more, I mean, not placid isn't the right word, but it was just like, all right, so I'm doing this and I'm, all right, here's an Ancestral Recall. I guess I'll take that. And then versus like on the podcast or even like now where I'm just, you know, having a blast is like, all right, here's just rambling on about peaches and herb and whatever.
What? Yeah, I saw that.
I was like, what is this? I've never heard of this song before. And yeah, there we go.
Okay. So, obviously it was after, it was about a year after you started, because it's definitely after New Phyrexia came out.
Oh, yeah.
But at what point on your, like, crack a pack type section did y'all decide to always have Batterstall in the pack?
I have no idea. That was just the funniest thing. It was just weird circumstance, and I remember thinking at the time, it's like, you know, maybe people are overrating Batterskull. I mean, it's really good. I remember thinking at the time, because personally, I just love the Living Weapon. Oh, really? And I don't know if you guys have seen the SCG player tokens that they occasionally send out with orders.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the one for Alex Bistecki? The one with the germ?
I got that the other day, though. One germ, yeah.
Nice. I actually have
going in the cube.
I have that same thing. I got a SCG order and it's like literally right on my laptop. But I just like personally love the Living Weapon mechanic. And I was like, I think this card's really good. And we're thinking like first pick it in cube. I'm like, that seems kind of high, right? And then it would just get it over and over. It's like, all right, sure. Batterskull again. Batterskull. I was like, this is nuts.
Well, I mean, like you said, you're like, it seems high, but then like you just draw random packs. You're like, no, nothing better than Batterskull.
Yeah. It's like,
nothing better than Batterskull.
It's a pretty non-committal card too. Like,
uh-huh.
I remember at the time when it was spoiled, I think when I would ask like a lot of questions on Twitter about like, what do you think of this versus this? And like, I remember it was like Batterskull versus Precursor Golem. And I forget who, it's like somebody on Twitter was like, Precursor Golem. And this is kind of just like the kind of analysis, which kind of annoys me. It's just like Precursor Golem is 9 power for 5 mana and Batterskull just like dies to, you know, just some kind of like non-reality based analysis. Like it dies to Swords of Plowshares or something, or just like it dies to something. Like, yeah.
Just like Precursor Golem would die.
Yeah. I was about to say, yeah, does the same thing. I forget what, but it was like, it dies to like Wicker Bow Elder or something, or some kind of other thing. It's like, okay, that's not, that's like a very narrow analysis. That doesn't, it's like, no. And yeah, just like Batterskull just ended up being like, and it seemed like, yeah, there was this streak where he got in every crack of bag. It was like, okay, I guess we're taking Batterskull. It kind of disappointed me that in the commander set, like, it had a living weapon, which I thought was really cool, but it sucks for Cube.
Yeah.
It's like, I forget, it's called, like, Sickle something. It's not Sickle Slicer, because that's...
It's,
No, it's one that, like, cuts your life total in half, is that it?
Yeah, it, like, cuts your life in half. It has no evasion, which is awkward. It's like, what? Don't you want evasion? I forget what it's called. It's probably something, like, Reaper.
It's like a... Like, Geyser or something.
Yeah, or like, yeah, I was just like, no, this, I think like maybe we'll get some more, and it didn't happen. I was like, well, that's cool that we have one. It's just not good for Cube, but that's cool. It's kind of like in Time Spiral, how they had a bunch of nods. Scythe Claw, that's the name. That's, no, that's so generic. Come on. Scythe Claw, get out of here. But yeah, it just seemed like there was that streak where every time it was like, Batterskull, like, come on, man, seriously.
Oh, there was the one episode where, y'all, it was like 7 or 8 black cards in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, wait, here's not a black card, Batterskull. And they're like, yeah. Oh, wait, it makes a black turn.
Oh, I remember, I was on the floor, like, I think I was like bowled over in laughter. I was like, this is so stupid. It's like, all right, because it was the black episode, too, which was funny. It was like, yeah. What? No. Why is this? Oh man, that's crazy.
So it's definitely very interesting. Let's get into Cube, just some Cube discussion here. Our first topic is Cube versus limited draft format. And this question came to mind when I'm thinking, you know, I'm going on the forums and stuff, and I see people who will say, I really want to build an Innistrad cube, or I really want to build a Modern Masters cube, or I want to build a Tribal cube. And while, you know, all of this, nothing, of course, is better or worse than the other, I think there's, you know, oftentimes people try to have input on something or try to compare cubes when the difference between them is actually pretty large. And there's kind of a confusion. And then how I think it's a cube community, there needs to be some way to have a common ground for comparison. Because if I'm comparing a card that has to perform in a powered cube, like we'll say, for example, Mox Monkey, pretty good in powered cube, but you know, it's better than it's going to be in a cube that doesn't have very many artifacts. So when you go online, or when I'm on the forums and I see somebody say that Mox Monkey is nowhere near a cubable card, I'm like, well, the card's pretty good in my cube, so let's try it out. So, you know, have you guys ever had any experience with that, or yes?
I mean, sometimes people can use that to kind of dismiss conversation sometimes, which kind of irks me, where, you know, someone will ask, like, I don't think this card is good, and granted, I think personally in the past few years it seems like I've noticed a lot, I think we were actually joking about this before we were recording, about like exaggerated language,
mm-hmm.
and how it just seems like it's gotten worse in the past few years. And it seems like sometimes it just seems like it's done for mental shortcutting, you know, just at the risk of sounding just like I'm going completely off the rails. Sometimes when new thoughts are created, you know, sometimes our brain tends to mentally shortcut things sometimes. Like, during spoiler season, for example, I'll use that as an example. When we're comparing a 4-mana red creature, for example, most of the time we compare it to, you know, we have a lot of direct analogs in Cube, you know, like Flametongue, Hero, Hellrider, whatever. We're not just completely building that analysis right from the edge. Or, you know, we're not completely creating a whole new set of evaluation. We're essentially basing it on other things. And sometimes it feels like people will discuss a thing, but like discuss a card in Cube, like they'll say, card so-and-so I don't think is very good, or I haven't really been happy with so-and-so in Cube. And they'll say, well, then sometimes people might get defensive sometimes. And I find that sometimes happens as well. I don't know. Mm. I don't even know if this is even related to the question you asked, honestly.
No. It is. Go ahead, Drew.
I know what you mean. It's like, instead of pointing out, like, the plus and the minus for this card and situational, this card is okay and whatnot. They're just, like, strictly better, strictly worse.
Oh, yeah. Like the thing with the precursor golem and Batterskull. It's like, what? Can we have some more nuanced conversation or something? We're just like, I don't know, just sometimes it feels like that tends to happen sometimes. But in terms of just like creating a limited format, I remember talking with somebody about it recently in terms of cube design. I mean, honestly, cube, I think the main draw of cube, even from when it originated, I think it was in early 2000s, like 2002 or so, a lot of it, there really hasn't been a lot of documentation about it. I know it started by some guys in Ontario, but essentially from what I assume and from some small readings that I've seen, it's just essentially, what if we create a cube, a draft format where instead of we're drafting insert limited card like Ember Shot or something, we're just drafting the best cards ever. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like that where essentially you're obviously wanting to put powerful cards in there. And sometimes it feels like sometimes people think you can't have one without the other. Like you can't have a limited format created and have powerful cards. Like you can't have one without the other, when I don't think that really makes, when that isn't really true. But I think I'm sorry, go
like
ahead.
You have both, obviously, I would think.
And I think that's one of the things I've been, like, toying a lot with my Pauper Cube. Actually, pretty much, I think it was kind of influenced a lot by Modern Masters and, you know, the new Modern Masters, whatever that's called. Modern Masters 2015?
15, yeah.
Okay, I was about to say, it's called the Modern Masters 2. I'm like, that's not the right name, but I'm too lazy to figure out what it actually is. So I guess, yeah, that's it. But I remember, like, thinking about that and just kind of designing my cube, my Pauper Cube at least, with creating a limited format. And essentially, I think that's one of the things in which I think as a cube designer, you ultimately have full scope on. I think there's certain things which may be more difficult to really do in a cube, which may I don't think it necessarily requires, like, you know, if you want to make, you know, I think aggressive decks, I think that's personally like something I remember touting a lot back in the day. And I think this is soapbox again, you know, just kind of from a lot of my early cubing experience was based on a lot of cubes where aggressive decks were really bad. Mm-hmm. And then I think that kind of influenced a thing in my cube where I wanted to make aggressive decks good. And it was actually the first article I ever wrote was for Salvation on, you know, how to make aggressive decks good, because there really wasn't much discussion on that. It was essentially, here's my cube, or essentially a lot of articles seem like they were like, here's what cube is. Okay, now make my cube. It's like, okay, but that isn't really talking about why you should do so and so. Essentially, it's just like, here's some things I've done, but not really talking about design principles and things like that. Mm-hmm. And as a designer, you do have sway in terms of that, where sometimes it felt like there were some kind of, I forget when it was. I think it was like 2012. I think Tom LaPilli tweeted about how Signets and Bounce Lands make attack decks bad. And I think I did some drafts at the time, just like essentially taking out the Signets and then putting in other mana rocks. And I was like, that isn't true at all. No, and I think I actually tweeted that to Randy Bueller, mm-hmm, when he was talking about like Signets, and I think he just kind of like skimmed the headline and was like, well, I don't think Bounce Lands are good in cube either. I'm like, dude, this was written in like 2012. Like, and I think he just like didn't listen to it. And I'm like, okay, well, all right. Well, I tried. Mm-hmm. But I think it's one of those things where essentially you do have things you can do. I mean, if it was just simply compiling the best cards in Magic, I wouldn't have been writing about cube for about 5 years, because it was essentially just like, this card's good, this card's bad. All right, here you go. Whoop-de-doo. You know, that would be essentially like child's play. That's not necessarily very difficult. But like, for example, I think there's other things like, you know, like whether you want to like wildfire in, I think red, I think is an example where you can, you have play. And I think that's something Wizards has actually been kind of doing lately as well, has been kind of playing with what they want red to do, not just being a burn you out archetype.
Mm-hmm. And another identity.
Yeah, and I think that maybe just because I'm looking at Mythic Spoiler, and there's like Chandra and Goblin Dark Dwellers. But...
Well, even recently they've been printing cards like Duretti and like a lot of the artifact cards and Magus of the Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a cool, like, I'm not going to say like new generation red, but just something different, which I'm a big fan of. I love the artifact deck, and red pairs very nicely with it.
Yeah. And essentially that's something like you can do it in your cube, or you don't necessarily need to, you don't necessarily have to. I mean, it's something you tend to hear a lot in, you know, cube discussion is, you know, just like, I want to put this in to support so-and-so, or, you know, like, I want to put this in to push tokens. And I guess that's something you can do. Sometimes it feels like that can doesn't necessarily happen. Like, sometimes people can say, like, I want to push tokens, and then it's just mm-hmm. doesn't do anything. And that's something, like, again, you can just kind of play with, which I think is probably my favorite part of cube design. You know, especially like, you know, I keep going back to my Pauper cube. Again, that may just be because I have it on my desk right now. But, you know, just, I think that was one of the things where, for example, like Affinity or Metalcraft, I think was something I wanted to try out. It was like, is this something that honestly, realistically, is something that can be done? And if it's good enough, or is it a good deck? And I think that's something that is a bit like something you can do to quantify things as well. Like sometimes it felt like that was a way with aggressive decks. Felt like people were just saying like, yeah, I support aggressive decks, but they were never any good. Like they were just one and two. They would just go 1-2. Mm-hmm. I remember there was somebody's Pauper cube, and I think that kind of that I drafted locally, and like I remember drafting it, and aggressive decks were never doing anything. Like they were always just like really not, they were just kind of suboptimal. It just felt like if you were wanting to actually win, you would play like a blue deck or a big deck. And I remember we would always draft at Denny's, you know, after FNM. And I remember one of the people who drafted, and it was kind of interesting because I never quite thought of it from like a drafter's point of view. I always thought it from a designer's point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think that was why we had Marshall on for one episode, because I thought back on that was that guy, his name was Chuck. You know, Chuck talked about how, like, in so-and-so's Pauper cube, you always want to try to extract cards for maximum value. Like, you never want to evoke creatures. You never want to not play stuff for kicker. Like, you'll always have time, so you always just want to get maximum value out of everything because, you know, the decks that'll go under you are not really any good. So you just essentially just always try 2-for-1 and then do that. And I remember talking to him. I think I remember being pretty unhappy about it one time. I think it was at Denny's, actually. I remember telling him, like, I remember, like, turning my head to him, like, have aggressive decks ever, like, 3-0'd or even, like, 2-1'd? Because they always seem like they're really bad. And it felt, I think he got really defensive about it, but eventually put forth effort into making aggressive decks actually decent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last few times I drafted, like, the aggressive decks were at least decent. They weren't awful, but they were at least capable of, you know, winning, which I thought was a good sign that he put the effort into that. And I think that's kind of something similar. Like, I think that's something Randy tried to do with the whole vampires thing, and I think that's didn't really do anything in the Moto queue, but it was something that, you know, he tried to do.
We
talked about that.
I think some people joke about it, but like just the effort itself put forward to try to fix it is pretty good, at least I think.
One of the things that kind of irked me about that the wrong way was that in the article itself, it talked about how, like, black is always bad. Pretty much everybody agrees with it. So here's this. But it kind of felt like it was very insular, like it wasn't based on what other people were doing. Mm-hmm. It was just like, all right, so it just... I remember a lot of the early Moto Cube design stuff was just like, we can't have black because they're too good against... We can't have the pro black swords or something. We can't have the... Yeah, I think it was a pro black swords because they're too good against black. Because I think there was a pretty... There was this guy named Greg Marks who was a Magic... He was in R&D for a while, and he wrote an article for Channel Fireball about how to make black not bad or something. He talked about how the swords were too good against black or something. And, like, it seemed like they stuck with that ideology. And it was very, like, insular, like, signets are too good. Sword pro-black swords are too good, but they would put it in the, like, vintage or holiday cube as just, like, okay, here's this Wild West where, you know, everything happens or something. Where that isn't necessarily the case. I feel like sometimes that can happen or something where it's, like, a misconception where if you have power in your cube, you have to design where pretty much it's people are just like ramming their heads against each other, which isn't necessarily true either. Like,
yeah, that leads to time vault being a thing.
Yeah.
But I always kind of take offense to that. You know, they say that black can't ever be good. And, you know, granted, I personally draft like a blue base deck. I have a lot of black cards in it sometimes, but I remember one time we had a 10 person draft at my local store and the mono black deck won it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And it was like a, you know, pretty wide range of cards. He had like anything from, Thoughtseize, Bloodghast, you know, he got Liliana. So, I mean, he was getting the good cards, but I mean, the deck was there. And I don't know. And none of the games played out the same way. Like sometimes he would slam, you know, Draw Messenger on turn three. Sometimes on turn three, he'd go, him to Turok, you Thoughtseize you.
Oh, I mean,
it was like there's ways you can build this. It can be aggressive, and you know it can be good. And I think some people just kind of just like, oh, let's not have the pro black swords in there. It makes it too hard to play black. Like, well, most of the time that deck, if it would lose, it wouldn't lose because of the sword. That kind of caught me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I think that's something in terms of black. I think that kind of also like black and red. And I think blue as well, you know, I guess all the colors really, they kind of, cause I think a lot of cube design, essentially like, cause black has a lot of things going on, you know, there's aggressive elements, there's reanimator elements, there's mid range, there's removal, there's discard, there's, you know, like kill spells, cause black has a lot of kill spells and, you know, effects of those kind of the nature. And it's all about, I think that's something that, like, I've looked at in my cube as well, is looking at what things you really want to do. Cause you can't, you know, it could be something like, okay, this card is better than this card or something, or this card in the abstract is better than this card, but what cards are really pulling their weight? And one thing I've, like I said earlier, in terms of, it's one thing if a deck is there, it's another thing is it's actually doing well. That's something I've been doing recently for the past like year or so, is just cause part of it is because my phone camera was terrible because I didn't use a case. So my lens got all scratched up. So it was like the worst camera quality. So I would just export them to Modo and just do it that way. But like after the draft, like take the 3-0 decks, like I would do some stuff too in terms of like, you know, creating a spreadsheet and like noting the 3-0s, the 2-1s, the 1-2s, and the 0-3s, and doing it that way. Although I think very few people are as maniacal as I am to do that. Then I don't think that's really something I would necessarily do. But I think like taking the pictures of the 3-0s just gives you a nice snapshot. That's something I've been doing. It's like, here's a what 3-0'd the last week on 12-8. And it was like mostly black deck with like, you know, Enlightened Tutor, Imperial Serial, Gravecrawler, Wretched Confluence, Grey Merchant, Braids, Sorin, Toxic Deluge, you know, stuff like that. But at least gives you a nice snapshot. It's like, what did the deck look at? I'm like, I don't know. But that's something I thought was, you know, again, I don't know where this point came from. But it's essentially, but I think that's the thing where like red, I think, is a classic example. Blue, I think green has another one where I don't think green aggressive decks are necessarily bad, but it's just like, what are those decks doing? I think that's something that we talked about on the podcast was not necessarily that. And I think that's kind of a part of exaggerated language is when people saying like Jungle Lion is bad. I don't think it's necessarily a bad card, but it's just, what does that contribute to your cube? Like personally, I tend to like the more aggressive cards in green to be more universally playable, like Curse of Predation, which is pretty dumb. I'd probably say probably the best anthem in Magic. Maybe.
Sure.
But yeah, just like stuff like that where it's, I think I talked about like Wingman green cards, and they're kind of like that where you know, they're not necessarily so single-mindedly focused. But that doesn't make Jungle Lion bad or anything. It's just, what is that contributing to your cube? Mm-hmm. And, like, being able to design from there. But I think, like, that and there's, like, I think that's one of the things I talked about in that first article I wrote is essentially talking about cards that are essentially, for lack of better terms, universally playable where you can play them in anything, like aggressive cards and control cards or non-aggressive cards. And as it turns out, you need a lot more aggressive cards because you can't really put a five-creature aggro deck is pretty terrible. Let's be frank. Five-creature yeah. control deck? Yeah, that's not out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
But like a five-creature aggro deck is just going to be terrible. Like, get out of here. Like, no, that's not going to do anything. But I think it's something that also, like, I tried Storm in my Pauper Cube in terms of trying some things out, in terms of, like, Ghostly Flicker and some other cards, like Mnemonic Wall, and seeing how those work together. And I think somebody just built a deck that did pretty well. He didn't 3-0, he 2-1, but it was, you know, still quite a nice deck that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially just looking at, I think that's essentially in terms of a limited format is like, what do you do to design a format? Like, what things can be done and what things can realistically be done?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask this. How would you define a cube versus defining a limited draft format for somebody?
I think I'd say a cube is probably just like, one of the things I think I remember describing it as before is a limited format that highlights the best cards in Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if you were to look at a card like, again, I'm just looking at my Pauper Cube. It's right here. Like, I don't know. I guess I should use my regular cube. Mimic Vat, because it's right here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess in the grand scheme of things, I'm not sure how well you would say it's like one of the most powerful artifacts of all time. I guess you could. Maybe. Like, if someone was to rank them in some kind of grand ranking, I guess that would be.
I think it's towards the middle part, but it's definitely yeah. still very high. Yeah.
Well, it's probably one of the higher ones that doesn't produce mana.
There you yeah. go. Yeah.
But it's just like that where it's not just necessarily just like all the best cards put together. I think a limited format is, I guess it's just a, where you're kind of building on the fly. And I think I've heard discussions on how much of cube is limited versus constructed. And I think in cube, you're essentially building a deck
mm-hmm.
based on certain archetypes. Like you're building like blue-white control, or like Storm, or like an aggressive deck. Essentially, you're building a constructed deck on the fly. Where it seems like in a lot of limited formats, it seems like that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
Although I felt like that's kind of been influenced by Cube, like Modern Masters, Innistrad, Rise of the Eldrazi. You know, those are the big three I can think of. But like Magic Origins, you're not necessarily crafting an archetype like you are in Innistrad. Essentially, you're just building a yeah, deck.
The synergies don't matter at all, hardly.
Like, yeah, it's just like, I got my creature through Renown.
Yeah, it's almost like an assortment of the highest quality cards you can get at the in that set kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that's
a synergy, yeah.
Like, sometimes I remember, you know, somebody would play, like, an aggressive deck with Elishnorn or something as their top end. And like, Elishnorn's a really good card. I remember, like, everybody and their mother, myself included, underrated how really good that card is. And as good as it is, like you could say, in the grand scheme of things, I would say Elishnorn is more powerful than like Isamaru or Mardu Woreaper or something. But it still doesn't necessarily make sense to put Elishnorn in an aggressive deck because it's not necessarily doing what that deck is trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in like a limited format, that probably wouldn't be the case. Like in, if there was like Magic Origins, unless the format was fast enough to where you wouldn't want to play a 7-drop in your deck, that's still probably fine. Like
yeah,
in like a,
the bomb, yeah.
Yeah, like you could play it in like in Magic Origins, like Zendikar seemed like an exception just because there were so many cards that normally would just be ridiculous windmill slams, like, what was that, the original Kalidus?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He was, from my understanding, he was pretty bad in that format, because he cost 7 mana. How's this build?
That's like, in a Gatecrash, they had the Primordials, and they were unplayable. You couldn't play that meta. Like, you never got to 7 mana.
It's like, and you're dead. It's like, oh, great. I got this dumb guy. I remember trying to force, like, a kind of control that can gate crash. And it was a free draft, and it didn't work. But I was like, all right, free draft, so I don't care. But yeah, it's kind of the similar way. Where, like, Sorin Markov would be ridiculous in most limited formats, but in Zendikar, it was good, but not ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like it in your hand more often than not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like, ah, sweet, I'm dead. Awesome. GG. Awesome. But I think it's kind of that way where it's something where there are certain things which certainly can apply. Like, you can't get the consistency like you can in, like, a constructed format. Like, your finishers aren't necessarily as consistent. Like, you could play a blue control deck and your finisher could be, like, Aetherling or Frost Titan or Consecrated Sphinx or Wyrmcoil Engine or something. Or your spot removal is Path to Exile versus, what's that one, Journey to Nowhere or something.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, you don't necessarily have that complete control, but essentially you're just kind of building on the fly, which I think is an interesting part of Cube.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the main thing, I think. Although, like I said, I think formats like Innistrad, and I don't know if Conspiracy really did, but honestly, I never really drafted it. But I know Modern Masters was definitely big onto archetype drafting, where you couldn't just build like a pile of cards. Essentially, if you wanted to do well, you wanted to draft to an archetype. And I think that's one of the things, you know, at least when telling new drafters, is like, you don't want to just draft a pile of cards, build a deck.
Yeah.
I definitely had some decks where I would just look at them just like, where I just drafted a bad, here? I would draft a bad deck and I'm just like, this is like a pile of cards. Like, what is going on here? This is terrible. Like, I think I actually did that on, there's a recent MotoCube draft. I was like, this is terrible. Like, what am I doing? This is awful. Like, this is just a pile of cards. And yeah, but I think that's part of it. I think it's an interesting part of the cube design process.
Yeah. I just, a lot of those, I really like what you were saying about the limited draft formats, because it brings me back to well, what set was Triplicate Spirits? Was that M15 or M14?
I don't know.
M15. M14 with blue was the only playable color.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that's what I was getting to, is even in that, and then even in reminding myself of Theros block, like blue-white heroic, and the couple archetypes, they may have one or so archetype per set, or even, like, block. I think in Theros, blue-white heroic was almost untouchable, but what else do you build? There were a couple other archetypes, but it's not the same. Like, they're just nowhere near as strong.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you can, that's also a really nice thing about Cube as well, is you can tailor with, you know, what your environment is doing. And I think that's a nice thing, a good thing about Quant. I think that's something that Moto has kind of done lately, is to use like data analytics, or, you know, just finding out what cards are working well. And granted, sometimes I think that can be used a bit prematurely, but I think I do like that kind of concept, is, you know, if you go into a format like M14 where it's just like blue is the only playable color, then I forget if that was the format. It was the one with, like, Azure Drake, I think. I don't know if Azure Drake was M14. Let's find out. I know it was printed in Legends way back in the day. Azure Drake. Was that M14? Magic 2011, maybe? I don't know.
I'm unsure, to be honest.
I think it was 2011, but I remember there was one format where just, like, blue was ridiculously good, and red was, like, a color you could play a certain way. Like, you kind of had to play it like a burn deck, and you had to really, like, draft it carefully. You had to play it carefully. And it could work, like, if you did it right. But why would you do that when you can just play blue and just crush everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same way where you just don't want your cube to be like that, where it's just like, why would you draft anything? Like that Popper cube that I was referencing earlier. M11. That's the set. Okay. Or, yeah, M11. Yeah, but it's like that cube where it's like, you could try to do something else, or you could try to draft under, but you could just have it pretty safe and just draft, like, a value deck and just crush everybody. And it's like, that's something you can do. Like, if you notice, like, an archetype being ridiculously better, or one that's just terrible, then you have the tools to figure out what's going on and just figure out, like, sometimes it's user error. Sometimes it's just people not building decks right. Sometimes it's, you know, not enough support kind of thing. I mean, honestly, like, I remember seeing this. Sometimes it can be just misconception where someone can be like, green decks are always bad and they're doing well, but they're not looking at the decks that are 3-0-ing. Like, they're just not looking at it correctly. Or like, they can look at, like, red decks aren't good or whatever, like, aggressive decks aren't good or whatever, like, control decks aren't good, but they're not, like, from a draft or POV, they're looking at a very limited scope, but they're not looking at the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Joe, are you going to say you said he had a story?
Oh, you said something about, like, maybe they just built the deck wrong or just played it wrong, because, like, when we had a new guy draft a cube a while back, he got in the mono-red spot, you know, he was fairly new, so he just drafted it, and it was aggressive. And then I saw him kind of deck building, and he had a card off the side, and I looked over, and I was kind of there, and I was like, "It's Vortex."
Oh yeah.
What's your first card you're putting in? He's like, "No, it's probably going on the sideboard." I'm like, "Hold on a second." Like, have you read this card? And he reads it, and he's like, "Oh," I was like, "Yeah, that's like the best card in the deck. Just get rid of something else."
Yeah,
cut a land. I don't care.
Yeah. Cut some 2-drop.
So sometimes it looks like that color might be bad or underperforming when somebody drafted it wrong and just played it wrong.
Yeah.
The common mistakes that you see cubers make that are easily fixable. Like, you know, whether it be, you know, like just card inclusion or cuts.
Mm-hmm.
I know one for me is like when they just, you know, did the lazy cuts. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I think
out, let me cut this one. It's perfectly playable.
Yeah, just like here's another one. It's like, okay, here's a It's like, here's a burn spell. Okay, let's cut this one. It's like, wait, what? You have other cards? What's going on here?
You said something in one of your, I think it was two episodes ago in the Third Power podcast that really resonated with me. It was, if you're not looking at your on deck binder, you're doing your cube a huge disservice. I was like, wow, it makes so much sense. Because, yeah, just the lazy cut thing, I think, is so common in the cube community. But go ahead, pardon me.
I remember, like, there's one thing I actually remembered. I remember looking at, I think it was an article that Justin Parnell wrote about, I think he actually quoted me, which was weird, but I'm not complaining. But it was something like about, let me see if I can find the quote, but it was essentially something along the lines that I said of, sometimes I'll see, and this isn't necessarily tied to cube, although it might be, it's more just in terms of general evaluation, is sometimes people will make the same mistake, but they'll repeat it in terms of evaluation. Like, I don't know, look at a card, like, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, just like some flexible burn spell or something, and they'd be like, all right, so... Okay. Maybe like something like a flexible modal spell, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like Everfilling Chalice. They'll say, this card is bad because it's strictly worse than, like Everfilling Chalice, strictly worse than Fellwar Stone at 2, strictly worse than Thrain Dynamo at 4, and at 6, it's, strictly worse than, what's that? Yeah, like Gilded Lotus, what's that one, Dreamstone Hedron or something, and yeah, Dreamstone Hedron sucks, so why are you playing it? And then eventually they would realize that it's not necessarily that's bad, but the flexibility that makes it good. And it's like, oh, okay, so that card's good, as it turns out. But then they'll make the same mistake with like a similar kind of card, like Hangerback Walker or, you know, some other kind of flexible cards. Like, well, at this mode, it's bad, and at this mode, it's bad. And at this mode, it's bad. So this card's bad. It's like, what? Didn't you just realize this? The same thing just happened. And again, that, and I'm not, you know, saying it's just for people who, you know, evaluate cards for cube, but even like, sometimes I tend to see that happen just in terms of general card evaluation or just get very, like, compare like for like, but they won't, I guess for lack of better terms, what's the saying? Like the, something about the forest and the trees or something? Like not see the forest for the trees or something?
Yeah,
where it's kind of like that. The quote, I haven't looked it up, but I think I've got the quote. It's something like, if you're just repeating past mistakes, if you're making the same mistakes over and over, and then you realize the card's good, you're not necessarily learning, you're just keeping up. Let me see if I can find that quote. Cause that was one of those weird moments. I was like, wow, that's, it's one of those moments of clarity. It's like, have you seen Pulp Fiction where it's just like,
oh yeah.
And that's just kind of the same thing. It's like, that is one of those moments of clarity. I cannot find it, of course. Let's see if I can find this. Let's see. I think I can find the article. I think it's from, Justin Parnell wrote about like mistakes. Let's see. Mistakes. No, not istakes. Mistakes. My apologies about this possible awkward. Ah, there we go. Mistakes were made. That was the article name. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, I thought he would have it segmented. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. If you aren't willing to learn from and admit to prior mistakes, you aren't actually improving your skills. You're just keeping up. There. So that was a quote. Oh, that build up. But sometimes I tend to see that happen where people just make the same mistakes again. Or they'll just look at, you know, like I said, with the batter skull thing, just look at it from one very narrow facet and like, this card sucks because on this very narrow axis, this card is bad without looking back. I think batter skull, I think maybe people underrated it because I remember at least in standard when Stoneforge got when it got banned and Jace got banned, people were like, batter skull sucks. It's a, it costs too much. It's a 5 mana. It's so clunky. I'm like, it's still good, right? Like you can just hard cast it and
just like resolve and win the game.
Yeah, just attack with it. Lately I've been equipping Batter Skull on stuff more often lately. Just because lifelink and vigilance and whatnot is nice, but yeah, it kind of feels like that's been happening. It's one of those things where I feel like that can happen sometimes. Like I talked about is where people can look at something where like this card, this archetype is supported or something, or this archetype, here's some cards, this archetype, but not really evaluating if it's any good, or just like, hey, this card wanted or like did something once, but never did it again. So that's like maybe not being objective. I think that's something people sometimes can do in Cube. And I think I can probably admit that myself, where I think I probably tried to like a card a bit longer than I probably should have because I really wanted it to be good and it just wasn't. And I think sometimes people like getting married to cards. I think it was one of those things where I submitted a question on Reddit, I think about Pimpage or something. Was that about? Because I remember like cards signed by somebody.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think the person who answered is like, you know, I looked at everything objectively, you know, and I think sometimes it can be difficult to really look at things objectively. Like, I think we can tell ourselves that we're being objective when we're not necessarily doing so. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something people can kind of, again, not necessarily just in Cube, but in Magic itself, you know, just kind of holding on to an idea which may not necessarily be right or even be good. Mm-hmm. Or just like a pet deck.
Oh, sorry. I was mid chew when you had asked that question. I was sneaking a snack. I was like, yeah, yeah. But sorry.
He's probably going on for another 5 minutes soapboxing about Mizzium Mortars or something.
Well, and what you were talking about earlier about how you look at a real narrow perspective, I mean, you can take that on a lot of cards, a lot of just things that come up in a Magic game. It's a lot like poker where like somebody tries to, you know, Magic players and poker players are the same. They always want to tell their bad beat stories. Like, oh, he top decked this against me and I had him dead on board. But like, a poker player told me, he's like, well, I had kings and he just snap called me with Jack 10. And how could he do that? And I'm like, I was waiting for the rest of the story and he didn't say anything. But I'm like, so what was this position? How big was the pot? How big was your chip stack? All this, like, these are factors that, you know, statically, yeah, he probably shouldn't have called a big bet with that hand, but these are things that, you know, contributed to that. You know, he's just been bluffing two hands earlier. Whereas, like, you can say that, like you said, that card's bad at two, bad at four, but, like, say the new, what are they, the confluences from the commander products.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all those modes aren't, like, great, but, like, having the choice, like, the modal part of them make them pretty playable, or at least a couple of them.
So, yeah, like I felt like Mystic Confluence was pretty obvious. It was like, all right, so this is Scriptic Command, and it kind of disappointed. It kind of disappointed me that the whatever legacy, whatever vintage cube, doesn't have any cards from that set.
Yeah, that's probably, I was kind of surprised as well.
I think because it was released on, those cards are released on Modo in the Legendary Cube packs, and I think that may, from what I understand, that it seems like it was an oversight. Like they forgot that it was included in those. Because he probably, whoever probably just did like a gather search and was like, well, here are the sets. And Commander's not on Modo, so that doesn't work. But yeah, just like Mystic Confluence, like what? I think I was like waking up at the time. I was like, this card, what? Is this Cryptic Command? I think, and then like fiery,
the red ones. Yeah.
I remember playing the Fiery Confluence versus somebody. I was like, all right, so. What are you at? It's like six. You're at five? Lamax, you're dead. He's like, what? I don't think he saw the card before. He's like, yeah, this card's just stupid. He's like, yeah, that card's dumb. I'm like, yeah, that card's dumb. I feel like Wretched Confluence was underrated. I don't know how general. How...
We talked about it earlier, and I was actually going to ask you what you thought about it. I haven't played it yet, but.
I like it. It's very flexible. Like, it's kind of unfortunate that the draw card is pretty embarrassing compared to the blue one, where it's just like, and you just draw a card. And this is like, you draw a card, you make target player draw a card, and you lose a life. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Magic. What are you doing? Make this. But, I mean, the other modes are still great. I mean, I think that's something where, you know, in terms of, like, when playtesting, I actually try to, when, like, evaluating cards, I usually in like the weekly drafts, I'll try to seed cards in the packs. And I think most of the regulars who draft tend to know the process. You know, I usually set aside some cards and then I go, hey, everybody make packs and make sure these are in it. And then most of the regulars know it figured out. Some of the new people sometimes have hard times, but you know, we don't usually give them too much trouble. Oh, hello.
Yep. I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought somebody got muted.
Yeah. I know what you mean about the seeding pack. I try and do that when, you know, just to make sure a card, I want to know if it works. So, you know, mm-hmm. You have to make sure they get in there.
I remember when, like, I wasn't drafting my Pauper Cube as much. I remember trying, like a mono black thing with, like, Corrupt and Tendrils of Corruption. And between updates, I never drafted. And I was like, so how's this archetype? I'm like, I have no idea. I've never drafted it. But it's nice having, especially during pre-release, I mean, last week I was unable to draft because they're, you know, just the holidays and circumstances. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to, you know, proxy up a few things to at least try them out. And then sometimes, like, if I have time lately, I haven't been just, you know, creating, you know, essentially pre-cons of decks and just like seeding it in there. And just like, even if it's just versus myself, just like, all right, here's a blue-white control deck with whatever. New blue card, Mystic Confluence versus like a red green aggro deck with whatever Fiery Confluence or something like that. And just getting a lot of reps in that way. It's like, all right, so here's however many reps. And usually I try to base my evaluations and articles and whatnot based on, you know, that individual data set. Again, I have no idea where this came from, where the soapbox came from. I have no idea. Because I think you're asking about, like, misconceptions, and I don't even know where I got this from.
No, you're good. I was actually going to ask you one more card, your opinion on one more card. I don't know if, I haven't been able to play with the new Commander cards yet, but have you been able to test Great Oak Guardian? Or are you playing?
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember, I thought I answered that on Twitter. I thought I said that I liked it.
Mayhem.
But I liked it. That card's good.
Yeah, I love that card. It's sweet.
It's like Overrun. It's like, all right, sure. I'm surprised it isn't in the Holiday Cube because, like, wanting to go like super crazy on the Kiki combo thing. But again, I think once they figure that out, that, you know, hey, those cards are still available online, they'll probably add it in. But
yeah,
I like it. I mean, if anything, like, I think somebody who drafted mono green or some kind of green rampy deck, I was like, that's usually what I tend to do. Like, if there's new cards and I, you know, somebody tries them out, I'm like, so what'd you think of so-and-so? And he's like, I don't know, I never drew it. It's like, All right, so there we go. That's
per usual.
It's like, okay, or just like, how'd that card do? It's like, it was really good. I remember, what's that card? Onifenza? Mm-hmm. Like Onifenza Kin Tree Spirit? I remember thinking, yeah, I think it was the first week it got spoiled. I'm like, this card's really good. Spoiler, it is really good. I think that's a card people tend to, I think I see underrepresented in cubes, but I think the first, I couldn't draft that week for some reason. I might have had a concert to go to or some other reason. I'm like, and that'll sometimes happen where I'm just like, all right, I can't make this draft, so I'm just going to drop the cube off. You guys know what to do. Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas. I'll get it later. And I think after that, I think I was texting him, like, I think I looked at the draft deck and it had Onifenza and he 3-0'd. I'm like, so how'd that do? He's like, this card's absurd. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised. But yeah, I think, I remember, yeah, just like asking that kind of info, I think is really useful. Just getting some, you know, and of course sometimes people can have their own, you know, innate biases, you know, in terms of evaluation, but you know, having that data is nice. And I think using that information, I think is great. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes like, I think it's something is people have talked about maybe in articles or something is just like, will it be willing to kill your darlings? Mm-hmm. Or at least try new stuff out, like again, the vampire thing. I think if anything, even though I wasn't really surprised that it didn't do well, I think it was interesting to see what worked and what didn't. I think the decks, the black decks that I found, you know, at least was seeing on like social media that worked well, had certain things that worked, like maybe they ignored the vampire thing or something, or just didn't touch on it much. But I mean, even in failures, there's lessons to learn. I think it's not necessarily going, oh, this card's bad, this card's good, or like, there's too much of this or something. I think that's something to learn. I think in terms of other things, I think, I don't know if this is a common misconception or something. I don't know. I remember like the whole like Planeswalker thing in Cube was a thing like some years ago, and I still see sometimes people saying like Planeswalkers make control decks too good. And I, or like Signet's too good. I remember that was a thing, like yeah, I said earlier.
I wanted to ask you about this. Funny you mentioned, I was actually going to ask your opinion on Signet's.
Oh, there.
Not to cut you off, but I'm sorry.
I don't care. How dare you cut off my soapbox where I'm going 10 minutes nonstop about stupid garbage or whatever. But, I'm throwing the microphone. I'm out of here. But I remember like, When Tom first did the tweet about it, and I don't know if he did much else about it. I know he did like a tweet and like a few people, like I think Evan Irwin and some other people took it as gospel. Like I think I did 5 drafts of it where I was like, all right, so I think I was running all 10 Signets at the time. I was like, all right, so I'm going to take all these out and replace them with like some mana rocks, like, you know, Chalice, Mindstone, which I wasn't running at the time. I have no idea why not, but you know, we all make mistakes. That was one of them. And, you know, just other artifacts, you know, just like some rough equivalent of what that would be. And it turns out the meta really hadn't changed much. I'm like, okay. Okay, that works. Sure. Okay. So then for a while before we started drafting regularly at Wizards Wagon, we were drafting pretty regularly at Denny's. And I think early on in the Denny's time, I think it was like a few months or so, like, I had kind of experimented on what Signets I wanted to run, like, you know, the blue ones, the green ones, whichever ones. And I think at the time I was like, you know, I want to see how it works again with all 10 Signets. So, and I was like, I also really like Wildfire. So I want to, you know, try to give some more oomph to that too and just see how all this goes. So I'm going to try it out, give it a trial run, see how it does. And then like the deck that drafted, it was like a 3-0 deck that just stomped everybody with some kind of green deck that had Signets. So I was like, okay, that's it's, I mean, it's not like, yeah, that's proof, but it was like, that's a good sign, and we'll see how it goes from there. And yeah, aggressive decks have still been very good in my cube since then. And the same thing with Planeswalkers. Like, I tend to like Planeswalkers a lot, just maybe personally, but just in cube. And I haven't found, you know, having a lot of Planeswalkers makes control decks,
I've definitely not done it either.
If anything, I found that, like, in the control mirrors, Planeswalkers can define that, But if you try, like, convincing me that, like, a Tamiyo is too, or, you know, some kind of 4 or 5 mana Planeswalker is too good, even just, like, a 3 mana one, like, a deck with a bunch of Planeswalkers versus an aggro deck, if that's the case, I'm not necessarily sad. And it's like, okay, sure. I'm just going to kill you.
Yeah.
So
unless they're sneaking out Ugin really fast, that's not really going to be that big a problem.
Yeah, if you sneak out of... It's like, well, I guess I'm dead now.
I've also heard the argument that Signets make green, like it takes away from green being the ramp color. Yeah. And I played, like, just I'm looking at one of my drafts most recently yesterday. I played a mono green deck, no Signets. I think I went 2-1. I didn't 3-0, but I got it to the grand finals and I had fun.
Yeah. And even still, like, nothing's stopping them from playing green anyway. Like, I remember, I think I've definitely played cubes where, like, they were like, I think they kind of ascribed to the whole Signets make control decks too good or something, but they still had talismans and aggressive decks were still very weak. So I just was like, okay, so I'll just take the mana fixing anyway, and I'll just do it some other way. Like, people will find a way, like, even if that's the case, it's just working within that, but I just didn't find that to be true. I think some of the arguments were just like, a control deck shouldn't have the right to a Wrath of God on turn 3 or something, or just, like, shouldn't have that access, or if it does, that makes it too good. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I don't... Like, don't decks have other things to do? Like, I guess it's kind of where that conversation, where it's kind of, again, it's just those things where in conversations, it's just like, this happens, boom. Like, control deck has access to turn 3 Wrath, the game's over. Like, okay, they're done. Because the assumption is the aggressive deck will have, like, vomited its hand out or something. Like, don't you have, like, stuff to do after? Like, don't you have, like, ways to refill your hand or not just play into their wrath or something or some kind of disruption? Like, isn't there stuff you can do? But it just feels like sometimes that happens in discussion where it's just like, all right, this, so it's bad. Or just like, this card is whatever and it's just not good, but... I don't know. I really haven't found that way for controlled. Like, the green decks, the green ramp decks use, at least as I found, the good green decks tend to use Signets anyway. Or at least if they don't, that's fine.
I had a Mana Crypt in my deck, but that's besides the point.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, the last good red-white aggressive deck I drafted had Boros Signet in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I remember one game, I cast Boros Signet, had, what, one drop, hit and then cast Signet. The next turn, I think I played two dudes, and then they played some kind of mana rock, and then I untapped and went Armageddon. And then
yeah, it's like, get wrecked.
Yeah, and then another time.
You got a mana rock, huh?
Yeah, another time I was playing the control deck, and I put out a mana rock. And then they went to, like, I played a couple creatures, kept up my one mana, my Boros Signet, and they went Wrath of God. And I'm like, sweet, Boros Charm.
Nah.
Gotcha.
Right. I mean, like, they can help aggressive decks just as much as control decks. I mean,
personally, I don't tend to play, like, mana rocks as much in, like, aggressive decks, but I mean, it still doesn't shift. I mean, there's essentially, like, wraths or, you know, any kind of control-ish element can, like, there's certain things which kind of lean more control-y or lean more aggressive. Like, you could say a card like, Elspeth Sun's Champion, like, it's not embarrassing in an aggressive deck, but most of the time I would play it in a non-aggressive deck. I don't know if that...
Yeah, I'd rather have the 4-mana.
The 4-mana one? Yeah.
Yeah, my curve up there.
Yeah,
but like Boros Signet in that deck was basically just for fixing, because I had a really good white deck with just a couple red cards is what it amounted to.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I know what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, where it's essentially, it's just like, there are these control elements and aggressive elements and whichever ones. And I don't think it's necessarily Signets are bad or give aggressive control decks too much, but it's just like, how are you balancing those elements in your cube? Like, okay, so if you do have all 10 Signets, what, like, sometimes I'll see cubes put, like, pretty much all the mana rocks. Like, even in my Pauper cube, I run all 10 Signets, but I'm not running necessarily Felwar Stone or anything like that because, to put it bluntly, I've got enough mana rocks. Like, that, Mind Stone, and, like, other things. Like, I've got enough mana rocks. And I think that's another thing where sometimes people are like, do you have no love for, like, Felwarstone, for example? It's like, A, like, I remember, like, Travis, what was his big thing was, like, you know, cut a card, add a card, or something like that. Or it's just like, what are you, what's the opportunity cost of this, or what's this really doing? And in the case of Felwarstone, I feel like I've got enough mana rocks, but it wouldn't necessarily make control decks too good or something. It's just like, I feel like I've got enough mana rocks as is,
mm-hmm.
where it's not necessarily just this card is good, but how are you crafting your environment with these cards that are good?
Yeah, I've found pretty good success. I was listening to, I think Joy of Cubing did an episode a long time ago, and I don't remember if it was specifically Cranny or Jack, but one of them only runs the Grixis Signets.
I think it was Cranny who said that, yeah, because I remember he ran like Rakdo Signet. I'm like, man, Rakdo Signet, that card's sweet.
Yeah, so I tried out the three, and I mean, I like it. I think
they're there. Of course, you don't have to play them in those respective colors, but I like the artifact deck, which is red-based, and then, of course, I've run so many mana rocks. I don't need every single Signet and every other single mana rock and Hedron Archive and Gilded Lotus and like all these other things I want. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just something I think people should try out if you're interested.
Yeah.
I've had success with it.
And I think that's the thing, which you can, it's, you know, kind of goes to our point. It's like, it's something you can tinker with. It's something you can play with. It's not necessarily you're tied to doing something, but it's like, okay, so you can tinker with it. You can see what works for your cube.
Gives you more things to sacrifice, Tinker, just saying.
There you go.
But I mean, and also, like, you, it gives you room to play with other art types. Like, it might, like, I have a pretty good artifact, thing, like, with, like, both Tezzeret and Jurati. You know, you need those to help Jurati decks. Or, like, mm-hmm. say you want Wildfire to be a thing. Like, if you don't have, a critical mass of cheap mana rocks, like, Wildfire just isn't a good deck at all.
Yeah, it's like, and I'm gonna, all right, so we're both getting four land sacrificed. All right, and then nothing happens. It's like, yes.
Uh-oh.
Where's my dig through time? Oh man.
This comes down to who has more lands in hand after that.
So. Yeah, essentially. Yeah. Well, I think that's an interesting dynamic of cards like Wildfire. And I feel like I've heard this on a podcast. I think it was like the Channel Fireball one when they did a cube podcast. It was like, before a lot of Planeswalkers were printed, you could kind of assume if you had like a Planeswalker or two, like you would have the advantage, where nowadays it's harder to assume that because like your blue white control opponent might just have like a Elspeth and a Jace or something.
Mm.
And you know, I didn't intentionally name it because, you know, they could be any iteration of either of those Planeswalkers. So I think that's interesting.
What do you think of the opinion that swords are too strong for the majority of cubes? Because I'm not saying this to, for lack of a better term, poo-poo on anyone's like design parameters of their cube. Because if you think swords are too strong, they're fine. I mean, cut it, do it. It's your cube, do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's kind of a misconception that they're maybe a bit better than they are. Because I don't know if it's just me, but Light and Shadow and oftentimes War and Peace, if you're not playing the red deck, they're just, I just don't think they're really that good. I don't know.
Like Light and Shadow, I think, is probably the one I like least, but it's mm-hmm. like pizza or barbecue. Like, it's kind of hard to mess it up. And even like bad barbecue is still, for the most part, good. Unless it's like awful or something. It's like ketchup mixed with like Coke or something. It's like, get out of here. It's like Sword of Vengeance. That's what that is. It's like, get out. I don't know, like, I do tend to find when people, in terms of just, like, the too good thing, I think that's where data using, like, more quantitative measures can definitely help with that.
Yeah.
Where it's just, like, if somebody says, like, swords are too good, just, like, find out where that's coming from. Where sometimes it feels like it's based more on feelings mm-hmm. than, you know, just actual, like, hard science. And granted, it's some, you know, even with like me drafting weekly and, you know, getting, you know, pictures of it weekly, like this folder that I have of like 3-0 decks that I started in, I think, 10/22/2014. Mm-hmm. It's only 65 pictures. So that's a decent scope, but it's not like that's nowhere near the amount of data that like Moto Cube has. For like 5 minutes or something, just because they have so much data that they're churning through. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes in terms of the whole too good thing is sometimes I think it's better to just like maybe not necessarily because like if you decide first and then kind of base your evaluation without having tried it or maybe based on like another cube or something, it's a lot harder than if you try it and then you actually get data on it and like, okay, so this is actually too good, or like I'm finding the decks that are 3-0-ing or 2-1-ing my cube do have a lot more planeswalkers than the ones that don't or something, where it's just based on feeling. It's just like in control mirrors, planeswalkers generally tend to define what happens. I think at least that's the impression. That's what I,
yeah, no, that makes sense.
Not necessarily hard data, but you know, just like in a game where it's just like control deck versus control deck and somebody has two active planeswalkers, unless those planeswalkers are terrible, you're probably going to win.
Yeah.
And that's at least what I found is sometimes it just may be based on that kind of mental, in mental image. And the thing is swords is, I don't know. I don't necessarily think they're too good or anything. I think find out where that's, I think if somebody is building their cube with that to try to find out where that's coming from and then see, but I don't know. I honestly think they're fine. Like, and yeah, Sword of Light and Shadow. I know it's probably my least favorite sword, like Sword of War and Peace. It's probably the same way, probably in my probably lower tier, but it's still fine.
Yeah, no, I mean they're fine cards, but
yeah. I have a feeling
it also.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It also would, I mean, have to depend on like how many answers you have for them. Like, do you have zero naturalized effect? Do you have, you know, just stuff like that? Like, you need to have, if you have strong cards, you need some kind of, you know, fairly flexible answers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, granted, the blue-green player is up against the guy that just Stoneforged in Body and Mind. Yeah, that's probably not end well for him, but you know, he should have something in his deck that can get rid of that sword.
I was about to say, if he's in green, most likely,
yeah,
hopefully should, or just like even just like throwing stuff. It's like, all right.
My favorite card from last year, even with, you know, we had Breamaz and Kronos and Dakvane, my favorite card is Reclamation Sage.
Oh, yeah.
It puts in so much work.
It's so innocuous, too. It's just like a 2-1.
Yeah.
It's a very good example of like, it did decent work in Standard. But it just feels like its impact in Standard versus in Cube is just like a lot more in Cube versus Standard. It's just, it's a very nice example of if there was like a Cube set in terms of a card that doesn't break other formats, which people might think, like if you're designing a Cube card, it's just going to break other formats in half. Like Rexage is a great example of that. Like Ophiomancer is another one, which is a pretty, I don't know if it's innocuous. I think people who haven't cubed much may underrate the card. Because, like, hey, is this 2/2 idiot who just snakes well,
on. Yeah. The other thing is that that card wasn't in Standard, right? Because it was in the Commander set, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not even modern.
Yeah, yet. So you can't even, like, most people just don't really know of it, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I feel like that's the way with this with some other Commander cards, too, where it's just, like, they've never played the card, so they don't quite know how good it is. But yeah, I think Ophiomancer is a big one. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's, like, this card just makes it a 1/1 that just never dies. Mm-hmm. Unless they kill Ophiomancer, then yeah. But for the most part, it's just so much value. But I think that's the one I can really think of off the top of my head. I'm trying to check to see if I can find any other pictures, but yeah, that's definitely a big one. At least the main, like, yeah, I think that's probably the best example I can think of is like a solid cube card.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. All right, so our next topic, we got some sweet spoilers this week. We talked about them earlier in the show, but Oath of the Gatewatch, new set, new mechanics, new mana, and some sweet expeditions. Have you guys seen this? I'm sure most of us have seen these cards at this point in time.
The expeditions or the cards themselves?
I had both.
Or both? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Definitely pumped about possibly cracking a wasteland. So that's
cool. Oh, that'd be nifty. Yeah.
Yeah, I am pretty pumped for the. I'm pretty excited for all the. What am I doing? I don't know.
Are you going diamond, filter lamps, or?
Yeah, well, everything. I'm sorry, I was looking at my dog as I started saying that. He kept bumping me, and okay.
So I was like, give me attention. Give me attention. It's like, I know cats are really, like, cats do that kind of stuff all the time. It's like, hey, 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 pay me attention.
Okay. So I'm really excited for the new Expeditions. Just, you know, I'm kind of big into the pimping side and all the cool foils. We got Strip Mine back, which I did not expect at all. It's going to be kind of interesting to, if you open that in draft, it's a big statement. Just strip mine your land. Just look at them straight in the eye. Gotcha. But anyway, Kozilek, the Great Distortion. This is the big card. It was spoiled, I think, a little bit ago, and it was recently confirmed. But 2 diamond mana, 8 colorless. When you cast Kozilek, the Great Distortion, if you have fewer than 7 cards in your hand, draw cards equal to the difference. It has menace, and it also has the ability to discard a card with converted mana cost X and counter-target spell with converted mana cost X for a 12/12. And I think before we get into this, we should probably talk a little bit about the colorless mana, or the diamond mana. This set is bringing a new, I don't know if it'd be considered a mechanic or just a new mana type that requires you to pay colorless mana. So do you think that's a viable, we talked a little bit about this before the podcast recorded, but you know, is this something we can really do in Cube? You know, is it good enough? Are we looking for, you know, are we looking for a quantity rather than a quality when comparing cards here, or what are we doing?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think in terms of right now, because there hasn't been a lot of spoilers for everything, it doesn't quite seem like the payoff is quite there yet. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the question is, if you're playing Kozilek, the Great Distortion in a deck, I guess the question is how many sources of diamond mana would you want in a deck to support it? And I honestly, because this is something we haven't really had, and I think it's interesting, like you know, Devotion, for example, and this is kind of making a positive out of something negative. Like, you know, you normally don't want your cards to cost triple black, but Devotion, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where here's like, I don't want my lands to produce colorless mana, but here you do. And honestly, I'm going to be blunt, I have no idea how many colorless sources I want to, if I had a Kozilek in my deck.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like, probably the payoff is worth it eventually. I mean, I'm just not sure. It feels like all the mythics got spoiled, but it feels like in the rares and whatnot, there's probably a good number of payoff cards. Cause I assume they want to make this happen for, you know, some formats, standard or modern or whatever. They want to make that payoff happen, but for right now, there really isn't much. Like, there's Endbringer, which is okay. There's Worldbreaker, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But a bunch of stuff, like the land, I think is interesting. Let me see what it's called. Seagate Ruins. Like, I think that card's interesting. The one where tap to add a diamond and then tap two and a diamond to draw a card, but only do it if you're hellbent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that card seems quite good if you've got the sources for it. But I guess it's the question is, like, typically, I think when cubes were first started, you know, way back in the day, a lot of the sections were very segmented, just very even sections. And I think part of it was done just as kind of a self-disciplinary fashion. Just like Wurburg was all the same, and they were all like creature, non-creature. The splits were the same. They were like all 50-50, except for creatures, which had more creature, or green, which had more creatures, and spell, and blue, which had more spells because, you know, it's blue. And then I think like multicolor and artifacts and lands were all the same. And I think one of the things I tried to do early on in my cube was not necessarily be bound by that. And I think that kind of, in terms of this, where you can, again, it's another thing you can design your cube with that in mind, is if you want to put, you know, more cards that make ways to pay off, essentially more colorless cards, like essentially artifacts and whatnot, is to, you know, what would you need to cut away from it? Like, would you cut more like multicolor cards or, you know, Wooburg or lands? And I just don't know if, like, right now, based on what I'm seeing, I don't know if I'd want to do that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe in the future there will be. I just, like, Kozilek and those cards that we've seen right now, just, like, I'm not seeing it yet. But, yeah. Again, we've seen, what, the 43 cards from the set? Like, I haven't really
Counting Expeditions, too.
Oh, yeah, those, oh. Thanks, Mythic Spoiler. I don't care about Expeditions. Mm-hmm. Or at least for Cube, at least. I don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's, at least I don't think the payoff's quite there yet, but I think, assuming the deck can play it, yeah, it seems fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still like I really don't know.
Yeah.
This is probably not the correct answer, but good.
Yeah, I'm thinking like, as far as sources, like Kozilek's funny because you have to have two, obviously, so the, you know, you can't use like the splash for like you use like with an off color bomb or something. But I mean, you're going to have a fair amount of incidental sources, like all your mana rocks that just produce colorless mana. Like if you run things like the filter lands or the pain lands, it would also lend you to, instead of maybe playing some signets, you can play the talismans that can tap for colorless. That could be like, you know, if the payoff is there besides Kozilek to actually put these in the cube, you know, those are some easy changes that don't really affect it, but would give you more sources without having to like really mess with your like basic land. I don't know how you're going to like give them X amount of waste or if they have to draft it or what you would do with that. But I'm looking forward to seeing some good cards that would make the payoff there.
Yeah. Cause I know at least in draft, it's like Cold Snap where you have to draft them during the format. But for standard, of course, you can just play unlimited ones. And honestly, like I said earlier, I tend to proxy stuff out pretty aggressively because if it's a card that I, you know, just unsure about, like, you know, if it's a card that I could probably theory crash for however long, it just seems like it's a little bit more efficient, at least for me to, like, if I'm drafting, to just, like, do, okay, here's a draft, we'll see this in, we'll do this. But for this, I have no idea. Like, I don't think, like, for Chandra, for example, Chandra Flamecaller, I can just take out a red card and put that in. And that's easy peasy. Like, okay, sure. Take out a, I don't know, Stormbreath Dragon or a Wildfire. You know, just some other equivalent kind of card or just some underperforming card or just some other card that I don't really, you know, I want to do in place of this. But Kozilek, like, if I do it now, it would be not very good. Mm-hmm. If I was to just like take out and granted, I don't think it's anywhere near as good, but I'm just using this for the sake of example. Mirror Battlesphere. Let's say I cut Mirror Battlesphere and put this in. I don't even think... Currently, I don't really think I have the support for it now, but I would have to make some pretty major changes to do that. But, yeah, I don't know.
No, I think the card... I think because of the card, I think it's good. Like, possibly drawing a ton of cards and having the counter clause and they can't single chump block it. Mm-hmm. It does have something going for it, but at the same time, it's not as good as the original Kozilek in the way that I'm always going to draw, what is it, four cards?
Yeah, you draw four. It. Yeah.
Cause like they say, well, like, you know, if you're reanimated, you don't get that. But on, like, usually if I cast a reanimator spell, it's usually pretty early, or that's what I aim for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might have five cards left in my hand after I reanimate this thing. So, yeah. Like, okay, I draw two, but like it doesn't have, you know, Annihilator and stuff like that. So I'm not sure how much better it is than Menace, the old one.
Yeah, Menace seems a little underwhelming. That's an appropriate term.
Yeah, it seems weird. Like, I guess you can't jump block it. It feels like it would have Trample or something. Yeah. Menace and Trample?
If anything, the counter clause on it, I think, is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. To
just discard a card, especially in something like a, you know, a blue-black delve deck, you know, that just has certain features, and this is the finisher. And you're like, well, I just drew a bunch of counter spells and cards that I don't need that I can use as counter spells. So yeah, game's over.
It feels like two would be nice, like two converted, like two and four, like the, cause it seems like those are the kind of the more push mana costs. Mm-hmm. And just cause it gets rid of a lot of like the counter spells or like spot removal and wraths. So you could just throw away a mana rock, for example, and just counter their like removal spell or something, or their wrath or something, which I think is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just like the restless payout, like, you know, like Endbringer, sure. Like the Hellbent Library seems nice. Like some of these cards, I'm excited about Crumbling Vestige for Paupercube because it's untapped mana. It's untapped rainbow mana, which you don't tend to see much in that format. So that seems cool.
Yeah.
Is that the one where it comes into play tap, but you get to add a color of mana?
Yeah, and then for the rest, and then for the, from there on out, it just taps for a diamond, which is, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Moving on here, we have, you did reference it a second ago, but Chandra Flamecaller, 4 colorless, 2 red for four loyalty planeswalker. It has a +1, put 2 3/1 red elemental creature tokens with haste onto the battlefield, exile then at the beginning of the next end step. 0, discard all the cards in your hand, then draw that many cards, +1. And -X, Chandra Flamecaller deals X damage to each creature. What do you guys think?
I've liked it so far. Like, I've been trying to test it, I just haven't had much time, unfortunately. But it's definitely a weird one. I think it's
definitely the big red deck.
Yeah.
Obviously, but, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I would play this as, like, a curved type or in a red deck. But it's not... I think it has a weakness that it's pretty bad against big creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I've found is like it can take care, like it can take down other planeswalkers really well. And like the wrath ability, I feel like the middle ability is probably going to be more in like in standard, for example, where you can build around it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like you just sandbag lands. And then, you know, if you can't deal, I think, although I give credit to Chapin because he kind of talked me into, he kind of sold me on the middle ability, where it's just like, if you can't deal with whatever they have, you just discard your hand and then draw whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also really nice. I also found when like chaining the abilities, like you 0 and then get 3, whatever, you pitch 2, draw 3 in the next turn. Let's say it's still not that great. You pitch 4, draw 5. That's really nice too.
Mm-hmm.
I do wish that the elementals added trample. That just seems really weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's, like I said, it's pretty bad against big creatures, which is awkward. But I'm excited to try it.
Yeah, it seemed interesting.
Yeah.
I may be wrong, but I was thinking the reason they didn't have trample is because, you know, when it, you're much less likely to chump block it if it has trample, if you're going to take most of the damage anyway. And one of the things that it can do, because like it, they say it doesn't protect itself because they go away, but like if you're attacking it for 6, like if they can chump block it, they probably will.
Yeah. yeah.
But then that creature can't attack you back, so it kind of almost kills a creature, or they take 6.
Yeah.
So I mean, the 3 power is enough to kill a fair amount of the creatures that are going to be out there. So if it had trample, they'd just be like, all right, take the damage, kill you on the swing back.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now they can like, okay, I'll, you know, absorb 3 or 6 of the damage and then try and deal with it another way. But yeah, I think if they had trample, they'd be less likely to chump block, so it would be less protection for Chandra. Does that make sense? It made more sense in my head.
It makes me think of, there was like Nezumi Cutthroat, for example.
Yeah.
Remember that card? And it's kind of like, it can't block, but it has fear. And we're like, I think it was some guy like Jeroen Romy or something, or some like limited player was unhappy about that because it made people play the card correctly. Like you always wanted to attack with it anyway.
Huh.
And like the fact that it couldn't block made you kind of play it correctly. And I think that's why they made, I think they talked about an article, Ulamog's Crusher, you know, the 8 mana, 8/8 Annihilator 2 has to attack each turn.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. So, like, you would be incentivized, I think, to do it correctly. You know, it's like you want to be attacking with your 8/8 Annihilator, so we're kind of forcing you to do it correctly. So it has to attack, so too bad. You're attacking anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of similar to that, where maybe it, I think that's where it's kind of like that with, like, what you were saying, Drew, where it's like they're making, kind of incentivizing them to act in its best interest. I mean, that's, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but
no, I'll go with it. Sense. Yeah, yeah. All right, our next Planeswalker is Nissa, Voice of Zendikar, 2 green and a colorless for a 3 loyalty Planeswalker, plus 1, put an 0-1 green plant creature token onto the battlefield, minus 2, put a 1-1 counter on each creature you control, and minus 7, you gain X life and draw X cards, where X is the number of lands you control. Thoughts?
I'll be blunt, I have no idea. I've been trying, I've been, like, testing it out so much, and I'm just like, I still have no idea what to think of this thing. But it seems alright. It's interesting, like, at least chump, like, you can at least, like, stop something forever.
Yeah.
I guess it can snowball from there, which is nice, but I honestly still have no idea.
I've never been opposed to playing a Planeswalker on turn two. I think it's fine. Like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of it. I don't really know why. I just really like green, or I like 3-drop Planeswalkers. I think they're really strong.
Yeah.
And I can just, like, you can either play it in a more aggressive green deck, I think, with its minus ability, but even just, like you were saying, chumping, or even early turns adding to Gaia's Cradle, adding mana to Gaia's Cradle is pretty
good. Oh, yeah.
I'm so looking forward to casting this at, like, Mana Dork, some play on turn two, untap for turn three, play this, then make a plant, then play my guy's cradle, and be like, okay, all the manas, and then class whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good. Like I said, I have not played with it yet. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to cube recently, but I think this card's pretty good. I don't know. We'll have to test it out.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how it goes on Tuesday's draft. But I think it's probably better than people think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's weird. It's definitely, it feels like it's a kind of card they like, feels like Magic has generally pushed 2 and 4 mana cards for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just recently started to push the odd mana ones, like 3s and 5s. And I don't know why, but it kind of feels like that's the way it's been for a while. And they've started doing that. One thing that is kind of awkward, like, if you plus it and they deal with it, like, you don't really get much for your trouble. It's like, I got a plant. Awesome. Which doesn't really do anything. Like, if they kill your Elspeth, you at least get a 1-1. But I guess the argument is that, what's a 1-1 really doing? Like, a 1-1 can attack for some damage, but what's it really doing versus an 0-1?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a thing where just, like, an 0-1 feels so much worse than a 1-1, where it's just like, this guy can't even deal damage or trade. But even if it's trading, like if you're chump blocking or just using it for sack fodder, it's not really doing, the one power isn't really mattering that much. But again, it's one of those things where it's like, sometimes you notice those things when you play with a card. Like, I think that's that thing that happened with Elishnorn, for example, when I first played it in Cube, where it's just like, tried it out, and then was like, oh, like those oh moments where you kind of see a card in action. It's like, that's what that does. Or just seeing some things which, you know, you can obviously read on a card, you know, you can read on a card text, but, you know, just seeing it played out is like, this is what the impact is.
Mm-hmm.
Or like playing versus Packrat is like, oh, it's forever.
I have a turn to kill this or I just lose.
It's like, and it, because I remember hearing some arguments when it was spoiled, like, it costs a lot of mana. It's like 5 mana for 2/2/2s or something, and like 8 mana for 3/3/3s, and then it just dies or something. It's like, that's not really how it actually plays out, though. It starts out, and it's not a 2-mana 1/1, which, okay, sure, whatever. They can't deal with it, they're dead. Yeah. They just die. They just can't deal with it.
And they're like, oh, it dies from removal. It's like, oh, I thought Steve that away. Don't worry about that.
It's like, yeah, my 2-mana creature dies from removal. What were you expecting, huh?
Yeah. There is one creature that I think is pretty interesting. Well, there's a couple, but the one that I've been looking at recently is Aili, Eternal Pilgrim. 1 white, 1 black for 2/3 with death touch. Pay 1 mana, sacrifice another creature. You gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness. 1 white, 1 colorless, 1 black. Sacrifice another creature. Exile target non-land permanent. Activate this ability only if you have at least 10 or more life. than your starting total. What do you guys think?
Seems nifty.
I can build my my cleric 88 deck now.
Uh oh! Did you buy your Starlet Sanctums before they spiked?
No, I missed the boat on that one, unfortunately.
Oh man.
I think it's pretty good. She seems fine. I mean, I don't think she's bad by any means.
Yeah, I just don't have room for it. But I mean, like, I'd play it if I saw it in a cube or something. But I mean, it gets a lot of value, and it doesn't seem like it's very difficult. I mean, you just get a lot of life. I mean, it costs mana to use, but I mean, okay.
Yeah, like conditional vindicate, still vindicate.
Yeah.
So, I'm okay with that.
I like how it kind of combines pretty well, nicely with like swords as well. Mm-hmm. Or there's like equipment that can buff or like ways to buff your creatures. Like that's a nice thing to do with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool.
Kalidus, Trader of Get, 2 black, 2 colorless for a 3/4 lifelink. If a non-token creature an opponent controls would die, instead exile it and put a 2/2 black zombie creature onto the battlefield. Pay 2 colorless and a black, sacrifice another vampire or zombie, put 2/1/1 counters on Kalidus, Trader of Get. I'm going to assume you don't give the token to your opponent.
No, you get the
token. No, you get it. Yeah,
okay. It's the zombie. Okay. It's pretty dumb.
Okay. That seems good.
I'm glad they don't have the stupid, like, they come into play tapped like they were trying to do a few years ago.
Yeah.
With zombies.
Yeah.
It's like, but of course they didn't do it for Grave Titan. And I was like, oh, okay, let's push Grave Titan. Okay. Those guys can stay awake when they come into play, but not whatever.
Yeah, Innistrad zombies were sleepy.
Oh, okay. It feels like it was in one of the core sets too. But yeah, I know. It seems like they've done away with that. And I'm like, thankfully, that's just awkward. I keep also thinking it has flying, maybe because it's a vampire.
Looks like he's flying. Those arms are out. But yeah.
Yeah, what's he holding his arms out for then? Is he like trying to give somebody a hug?
No, no.
It's like you died. It's the 2/2 hug. Something dies. Another creature died. So you get a 2/2.
Do you think this will make the majority of cubes?
Maybe not the majority. I don't know. But it seems good. I like it.
Yeah. I think it's one of those that I would be surprised if it's not pretty good. So, like, some cards, like, you have to play with to appreciate them. I think this is probably going to be one of them. And I'm thinking it's going to be pretty good. I don't know why. I don't know, I just envisioned not the magical Christmas land, but just, your standard, I'm playing black, so I'm going to kill things, and I'm going to get zombies and just make this guy into this huge thing and have a couple of chump blockers along the way, so.
Yeah.
It seems like that's not like that rat, not quite like pack rat, but like, if you make a guy, sack it, this guy gets bigger, you attack. So, if they chump block you, then you get another guy.
Yeah, which I think is really
smack in the face.
And I think it's really a nice thing about this card too is like it disincentivizes chump blocking, unless it's with tokens, and then oops, that sucks for you. But like just for like elves and whatnot, it just kind of disincentivizes that. It's kind of like with was it Desecration Demon,
mm-hmm.
where you can kind of feed creatures to it, but eventually you'll have to deal with it once because it's it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Where this kind of does the same thing, where it kind of disincentivizes people to do things that would stop it, like chump block it or whatever. Which I think is interesting, at least in terms of design, what's that, Abyssal Persecutor? Like, it has trample.
Yeah.
So they can't just be like, oh, here's my 1/1 spirit token, lol, I don't care, I'll just do whatever. It takes into account what realistically happens in Magic. And it feels like since they've gotten more, people who have played the game for a while, or, who have been, on the Pro Tour and whatnot, Prozac and Jerry Thompson and Melissa, it feels like they've started to, sometimes they take into that into account of how things realistically happen, not necessarily how things are envisioned to happen. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Okay. But it kind of seems like this is that way, too, where it's like, here's a way to disincentivize jump blocking, to just make your creature... So here's, you get a zombie, and then you can also just make your dude huge by just sacrificing it, which I think is nifty. But I think this guy's nice. It doesn't, it does suffer the fate of being a 4-mana creature. Like, if they kill it, you don't get anything out of the deal. And it doesn't have evasion, but I think that's fine, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still, its base stats are fine. Like, it's a 3/4 lifelink, which is, you know, it's still fine. I can't complain too much. I really wish that art wasn't. I really wish that art wasn't him looking like he has flying, because I think
like his old art was like just of like his back and like his head kind of turned to the side. If I remember right.
Oh yeah. Had just
tragically bad art.
Come on.
Whereas just... like Drano's been pretty good art. So.
Yeah. And I'm kind of surprised that hasn't done anything in standard, but I mean, Mantis Rider just kind of laughs at it. It's like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, a good post-rotation card, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But every time I've played with a card, it's like, oh, this card's dumb.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, so pump my team? Kill you?
Like, oh, wait, you didn't do combat math, first strike my team, eat yours? Good, great.
Yeah.
There is one man land that has been confirmed, the red-white man land. Obviously, it's called Nettle Spires, and it enters the battlefield tapped. You can add a red or a white. You can pay 2 colorless, a red and a white, and it becomes a 2/1 red and a white elemental creature token with double strike. It is still a land. I feel like, for the most part, don't we just... I think you just kind of put man lands in, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not... I'm trying to think of the stats it would need to be not... So, like, I think Lava Claw Reaches is probably the bottom of the... Mm-hmm. Of the, you know, mana fixing man lands, but it's still fine.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I play it in pretty much every black red deck.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way. Like, this is a little expensive, but I mean, I can't think of how many times like I've played a Raging Ravine or something, and it just comes into play tapped, and I never activate it, and that's fine. Because it fixed my mana.
mm-hmm.
And, like, it didn't cost me a land slot, or just, like, a Treetop Village. Like, I'll play it, comes into play tapped, and I just curve out, so I don't, like... Or I don't... I'm playing stuff on mana, so I can't effectively use Treetop Village. That's fine, because it's a threat. I didn't pay for it. Or I guess I technically paid a mana for it when it came to play tapped. Oh, well. But yeah, this card just seems great. I'm trying to think of how, like, the blue-red one, I think we were talking about this before the cast, where it's like, it's gonna be either ridiculously good or terrible. But since it's blue, it'll be ridiculously good.
Yeah. I'm hoping. You were saying, that more than likely, I think I would agree that it's probably gonna have prowess.
I'm pretty sure it's gonna have prowess.
I would say prowess and or. But prowess or like either the looter or rummaging effect, one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Either one of those would be good.
Yeah, I could see that. I like the black green one, apparently his regeneration, and it's like a 3/3, and it's like, okay, sure. You don't cost 1,000 mana to activate, so I'll play it anyway, so whatever. What do you think of that 4/4, that goblin, that like regrows a spell?
Goblin Dark Dwellers, right?
Yeah, I didn't notice until, like, Saturday that they don't have eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're very hard to see because I guess they grew up in the caves or something. Maybe.
Yeah, they grew in the dark.
So I think that's kind of cool, but I think I like this card.
So let me read it really quick. 2 red, 3 colorless for 4/4 with Menace. When Goblin Dark Dwellers enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with CMC 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. Yeah. Seems
free
good.
Burn spell, or if you're playing Is It, free draw spell.
Yeah.
So.
I'm pretty sure, it seems like most of the time, it would be kind of like a Fire Imp or something, where you're just like, you're standard game, you're just like slogging burn spells or something. It's like, all right, so here's 5 mana. I'm trying to think if I like this better than something like the old standbys, like Siege Gang or Storm Breath or Thunder Maw or something.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at my 5 drops. The Leech, Siege Gang, Zealous Conscripts, and then the Dragons.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if
I like this better than it, but it's, I mean, it seems... I'm probably going to try it anyway, just to get some reps.
I think Menace is really big on this card, too.
Yeah. Because they can't just, like, chump lock it with some soldier token.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, so here's this 4/4.
Yeah, I'm going to try it out. Seems good.
Yeah. I haven't done the math in terms of how many targets there are. But, I mean, it seems like the average red deck has enough targets anyway. Just, like, by playing Magic. And sometimes you're just, like, pretty much just, like, I don't know, what's the phrase? Like, getting all the... I think I mentioned this on Third Power, and I think Anthony was really confused. I was like, getting everything off the pig but the squeal or something.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, what? I'm like, what? Even it's like, what? I guess it's like that where you're just like using all your resources, and this kind of helps that game plan. It's like, and play this, bolt you. Or bolt your blocker, kill you, or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that seems...
Yeah, I'll try it out. I'm not sure where it stands in the overall grand scheme of things in terms of red 5 drops, but I think it's playable. Like, it's not embarrassing by any means.
Yeah. I think that's one thing it's and to note in Cube Tours is, like, something where, you know, I'd still, like, if there's a card which may not necessarily make your cube or something, but it's still fine. Like, it's still competitive. It's like, well, I don't know if I have room for it, but I mean, I'd still play it if it was in a cube deck that I saw.
Yeah,
and it probably goes in different decks than some of the other ones. So.
Yeah.
Definitely worth trying out, I think.
Yeah.
Well, we want to thank Usman for coming on and doing this podcast with us. We're both big fans of the Third Power, and, you know, just reading his tweets and getting information from him whenever we can. But I did have a couple questions that I would be remiss if I didn't ask, and one's Magic-related, one is definitely not. we'll go with the not Magic-related, and what are your top 3 metal bands?
Oh, top 3, that's good. So I think for a while, I think Dream Theater was probably my number one. If I had to, it's probably some mix of probably, and I guess it may change based on the day. I think Iron Maiden, probably at least very up there. Dream Theater, I think Iron Maiden, I think it's either like a good meat and potatoes metal band. Like, I think they were pretty bad during the 90s, but I think aside from that, they're, you know, their instrumentation, you know, they have like the whole two guitar, like triplet sound, I think was really good. I think Dream Theater is what really got me into metal, like really like kind of blew the doors open in terms of just like instrumentation and just like polyrhythms and stuff like that. And I think probably Dream Theater, I guess, is number one, even though I haven't listened to them as much in a while, but I'd probably say they're my number one. Probably Iron Maiden number two, number three, maybe a little bit harder. I don't know. I'd say Merciful Fate probably. Like, Merciful Fate, King Diamond, that could be possibly considered one. I know a lot of metalheads tend to, like, put, like, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden kind of similar. I don't know. Personally, I think I'm just more of a Maiden fan. Like, I feel like Priest was never quite as consistent as Maiden. But I'd probably say Maiden. Like, Judas Priest is probably pretty up there. Like, I used to have a... I don't know, some kind of proxy in my cube with Hellrider. I think it may have been Hellrider or something, or it was just like a album cover from Painkiller or something. I know I still have the Soltari Trooper, which, you know, I just, at the time when I was building my cube, I just built proxies and I was too lazy to actually buy a Soltari Trooper. So I used a picture of the album cover of the Trooper from Iron Maiden and just did that, and yeah.
That works. Yeah.
So I just did that. I was like, all right. And then I think I've, you know, gotten access to it. I think I just use like a regular, just like legit one for my Popper Cube. But I think that one's probably going to stay in there for a while. I'd probably say Merciful Fate. I think they've just been people tend to either really dislike or really like King Diamond's vocals, and I tend to be on the like side. I don't know. Like, personally, I'm not as big a fan of, like, Metallica as a lot of people. Like, I remember, like, the Black Album really got me into metal way back in the day, and then several years ago, I tried listening to it, and it just bored me. I was just like, this is just going nowhere. I did, even like Enter Sandman, I was like, okay, it just feels very plotting and just didn't really.
About 20 seconds into Enter Sandman, it's like, we're done here.
It's like, all right, yeah. And it's like, I remember thinking, like, is this, yeah, it just didn't really do much for me. Like, Megadeth, I think, like, they, like, when they were good, they were very good. I think maybe Sepultura. I don't know if I'd say I like Sepultura more than Maiden, but or more than Priest, but I think a lot of the times it's just kind of considering what are their best years or something. It's like, would I consider Sepultura's best albums better than Judas Priest's best albums? Probably not, but
I don't know. If you had to pick a concert to go to between the two.
Oh, jeez.
See, that's the kicker. If you think about, okay, if I had to go to a concert, you know they're going to play the heavy hitters and then a couple other favorites. But.
I never saw Sepultura during their prime, like when they were really, like really good, like in the early 90s, like during the Chaos AD. I probably would want to see them, but I think if it was just like really good show, I would probably Iron Maiden. I do, or maybe like, I don't know, I'll just say probably Maiden. I remember, like, funny thing in terms of this, like, I remember telling one of the Cube regulars, Tommy, I was like, so it was announced like a few months before the show. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to go to Cube this 1 week because Motorhead's having a show. So I'm just going to drop my Cube off and then abandon it. And then you just got to draft. And then I park my car and then I'm walking to the store and I see a guy, you know, this is several months later, I see a guy in a Motorhead shirt. I'm like, that's, you know, I tend to see many people with metal shirts. Like, that's pretty cool. And then, you know, I walk, you know, I go upstairs and, you know, drop the Cube off. And then Tommy's like, hey, isn't the Motorhead show? I'm like, no, that's a different day. I think it's like next week or something. And then I check on my phone and then it turns out the show is on the same day. It's like, oh, see ya. And thankfully that concert venue is like right, like walking distance right from there. So I'm just like, all right, I'm out of here. And then, but there was like some like kind of mediocre opening bands. And so I was like, I'm just going to go back to the store and then see what they're doing for Cube. And then I think it was around the time when Shambling Vent and Lumbering Falls got spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I think we did a sealed. I think they did a sealed because there was only four people. And then they tested them out. I'm like, all right. And I think there was somebody who had a black-white deck, and he had that in his deck. I'm like, all right, so I'm just taking over. I'm playing his deck now. And let's play Shambling. I was like, wow, Shambling Vent's pretty cool. And I think I honestly tried to go back to the store because they had a, I thought they would have like a cell phone charger, but they didn't. So I was like, oh, nah, screw it. I'm just going to play Magic. And then check the time. I was like, all right, so I guess Motorhead's going to be starting. I think it was either their opener or something. And I was like, all right, I'm just going back to this concert.
Magic and metal back and forth.
There we go. Yeah, they're like, you're back already. I'm like, how was it? I'm like, it's like just bad opening band. I don't know. The show itself was great, but I mean, I was just like, I'm not sitting around for in this Cube instead of just going to a bad opening band. Maybe not bad. They were probably just mediocre, but
yeah.
I felt like playing. There was new Cube cards to try out. New Manland.
Yeah, Not greater than Cube.
They're not more awesome than playing Shambling Vent.
They're strictly worse than Cube.
Oh yeah. what was the other question also?
The other question is, what are your favorite Cube cards to draft around? Like you had, you know, maybe two or three that you just really like. You open it, pack one, pick one. You're like, all right, we're all in. We're drafting this deck, and we're gonna go hard on it.
Oh man.
Very opposite of I'm going to stay open and see what I can do. Like, This is what we're doing.
I don't know if I intend to. I tend to just do that anyway. Just like I'm staying open. I too tend to like Goblin Rabble Master, which I'm kind of surprised isn't in the Vintage Cube.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
And I remember like for a while, like last year, it wasn't there, and it felt like there were some cards that were worse in it there, and I kind of figured they were going to change it, but they were like, everything's okay now, or like, everything's great, so we're not going to make changes. I'm like, wait, but Ralph
Mess. Blue card.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to put High Tide or something, or blue cards. It's like, well, okay. But yeah, I don't know, Ralph Master is probably, I don't know, like, in terms of just general build arounds, like, I don't know if I really have anything super, like, Growlmaster, I think I just like building around, but I don't know if that's necessarily, it's just like attacking. It's like, I'm going to punch you in the head or something, or probably like Stoneforge Mystic, which again, I think partly is because I didn't like the card much back in the day. And, you know, I warmed up to it and was like, yeah, this card's dumb. It turns out it's quite stupid.
It's pretty good.
And again, I don't know. A lot of these answers are just kind of like that, and like, I mean, yeah, I was about to say like that. Opposition's kind of fun to build around. At least that's the ones like you draft it early, you can definitely build around it pretty well. Like Workshop, another one. If you draft it early, you can really
love that really card.
Yeah, you can also
Blair Academy.
Academy. It's a fun one. Like, but I don't know if I really have anything like all that like unique. It's just like cards I just like. I think it's mainly just like Garrick Wildspeaker, or not Garrick Wildspeaker. Relentless, I tend to just like in general, but I don't know if it's anything I necessarily build around. But I mean, it's a fun card. It's a nice cube card. I think one of my favorite cube cards that I think people are starting to realize now online is how good Unexpectedly Absent is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like for so long people were underrating that card, and I think people are slowly starting to catch on to it. I don't know if it's necessarily in terms of just like, you know, cubes that include it, but in terms of just like people drafting it, like it seems like I would get it way later than I would, and it's like, oh, yeah, this card's stupid. Let's put it on top.
A guy let me tick up my Jace Telepath Unbound. Just let me kept ticking it up. He had no creatures on board, and I was just like ticking up. And then all of a sudden, in step, he's like, put that on top. I'm like,
fuck. Oh.
So sad.
Do you get Looter Jace back if you do that?
You do.
Okay.
Like, I'd recast him the next turn, and then he'd cast some kind of board wipe or something. But.
No. Boo.
I followed up the conscript thing to assign it.
So. Oh, okay, that works. I remember one time I think somebody cast like Elspeth, the big one, and I think I like Unexpectedly Absent it on top and like Geddoned or something when I had a pretty good board position. And then like he couldn't recover and then died. I was like, nice. But I don't know if there's much else. Like, I don't know if you can really realistically build around like Batterskull or something. You just play it and just kill.
Guys, put in your deck.
There you go. Yeah, just like attack somebody. Yeah, I don't know. There's not really not too much else I can really realistically think of. Did you get my the thing I sent in the Skype or Twitter message about the Pauper Cube Cracker Pack that I was gonna that I suggested?
I did not.
Okay, so the idea I had was for you guys, for me, because I have my Pauper Cube, is for me to have you guys do a Cracker Pack. Like I crack a pack and you guys figure out what to take.
We can still do it. I mean, I just put it, I'm chopping everything up anyway, so.
Oh, that's true. Okay. So I'm going to just completely random. I piled shuffle this a few times and it's mostly randomized, but I'll just, you know, build it from random sections. So, all right. Well, Delver Secrets, that's number one. All right. The Miss Raven, that's number two. Again, I'm kind of just doing this from random sections here. Number three, Skin Thinner. Number four, Sandstep Outcast. Number five, Custody Squire. Interesting. Number six, Full Shock Sorcerer. Seven, Serrated Arrows. Have you guys played Pauper Cube, by the way?
I do actually have a Pauper Cube.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, my friend's got a common keep, so, yeah.
Oh. What was after Volshock Sorcerer, sorry?
Serrated Arrows.
Okay, Serrated Arrows.
Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. Oh, number 8, Pestilence, okay. Sure. That card's
pretty gross.
Yeah. Number 9, Prismatic Strands. Was that number 9? I think so.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, yeah.
Okay. Number 10. What's the number 10 here? Chain Lightning.
Ooh.
That's a gold standby. Number 11, Simic Growth Chamber. Number 12, Celestia Signet. Number 13, Blind Hunter. I guess two more. Chainer's Edict, which got downshifted during Vintage Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird for that kind of card. Last card, probably going to be something stupid like Sprout Swarm. Elvish Visionary. Okay, that's not...
It's not a bad card.
Yeah. All right, so that's the pack.
Huh. Initial thoughts, I would either be boring and take Chain Lightning, or I actually like...
I thought the boring pick would be Pestilence.
Oh, or Pestilence.
Yeah, Pestilence.
Yeah, sorry. Pestilence or Chain Lightning. But maybe Elvish Visionary, actually.
Yeah.
I'm on a big thing for green recently.
Yeah, I would actually probably take Pestilence, but if I didn't, I would actually take Sandstep Outcast, and I like drafting white meanie.
Yeah. It's so much value. It's like, all right. I remember, thinking how often the +1/+1 ability happens. I don't think I've ever done that ever, like in Pauper Cube or in general. Like I haven't lately drafted much, and I think that's another thing I forgot to mention before is lately I just haven't had much time to draft, like just do regular drafting.
Yeah, you and me both. Yeah.
And I think if it wasn't for Cube, I just would be like, well, I don't draft anymore, and I follow Constructed pretty well, but if it wasn't for that, I'm like, I guess I'm just lurking, and that's sure. But, Cube is definitely something that, it's like, this is my kind of involvement in that, which I think is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'd probably take Pestilence. So I'm going to take out Pestilence and put another card in. Tumble Magnet? Okay, I don't know. Yeah, I guess either Chain Lightning or Sandstep Outcast.
I mean, Delver's a good pick too, but yeah, I have to play too many instant sorceries to flip it, and it's like Innistrad draft all over again.
I wonder, and I guess that's the question, is how many instant sorceries do you want to play in a deck that has Delver?
In a draft, we have one Delver. I asked LSV this question, and he said 8.
That's what I thought. I actually was thinking 8.
Yeah, he said 8, which you would want to flip it, in the first couple turns.
That's not too bad.
No.
Hmm.
But, I wouldn't mind. Sandstep Outcast is not the strongest card there, but like I said, I tend to want to go, aggressive white weenie, and, which luckily, all the decent cheap white removal was common at some point. So,
yeah, and that's kind of the funny thing about Pauper Cube is just, it seems like a lot of the early removal was common, and I think they've started now shifting that to uncommon, like the Doom Blades and stuff. Like,
yeah, throw it to, but, okay,
yeah. Yeah, Hero's Downfall. And whatever, that Ruinous Path?
Ruinous Path, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, alright, let's make this rare. It's like, what? So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get to play Pauper Cube as much. My playgroup, every time, I only get to Cube so often. And every time we cube, they're like, no, powered cube or whatever. Like, fine. I have so much time. I want to play this darn thing.
I remember, because I made a lot of changes to my Pauper Cube, and then was just like, I don't want to wait another month to see how it was, because usually I do it the last Saturday last Tuesday of the month to do Pauper Cube. And it's like, we're running it back. And there were some people who were just like, man, we're doing Pauper Cube. And I was like, yeah, sorry. We're doing this again. But yeah, it's kind of similar way I could think more people, and I think it's kind of the same thing where just like some people tend to prefer, other cubes. And I'm not saying necessarily a bad thing. It's just like some people like, I think I've kind of thought of this analogy before. It's just like some people just like Motorhead. Some people like Tchaikovsky or something. Some people like both. And they both, you know, kind of have their own, like, pluses and minuses. Like, but I think that's what I kind of like about Pauper Cube is, I don't know if it's more honest because it isn't necessarily, but it's just different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like Peasant Cube is, like, different than, like, regular cubes. You know, no Planeswalkers, I think, is...
I mean, you could theoretically put Tybalt in there that wouldn't really change anything.
Yeah, poor Tybalt. I have a feeling he's going to be, like...
It's going to be huge in Shadow.
Oh, when they go back to Innistrad, they're going to bring him, like, best 4-mana Planeswalker ever.
Oh, yeah. And I guess, I think because Mauro said, like, eventually, like, somebody asked him a bunch of, like, if or maybes or something, like, if something's going to happen or when it's going to happen or something. I forget the exact way he structured it, but it seems like they were implying that probably Tybalt's going to come back. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's a way things... I don't think he has quite the, like for a while, like Nissa didn't have the best reputation either because she was pretty bad. Like Nissa Ravain.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Did y'all watch the Tolarid Community College video?
Yeah,
that was funny.
Whenever somebody plays like Avenger of Zendikar, I'm like thinking like, for Zendikar. Like, Ashaya, where'd you go?
I'm sorry, but I'd heard a rumor that completely unsubstantiated that the next Tybalt will be red black, because even though Sarkhan the Mad was technically red black, like it, you know, doesn't see any play now, and it doesn't do, like, you know, it's just basically a dragon planeswalker. I don't know, they just wanted to go back and possibly get a red black planeswalker and Tybalt fits the bill.
That would maybe be awesome if you...
Two red black would be pretty good.
Somebody made me, like, because, you know, my Twitter name is Usman the Red, and, you know, it's actually a take on whatever Sarkhan the Mad. You know, and, you know, it's just, like, stupid pun, because I like stupid puns, but, like, somebody made, like, painted a Sarkhan the Mad with, like, my face, and for a while I was just, like, you know, it was decent in cube for a bit, but it was never really that great. And eventually it started like fading. It's like its stock ended up fading just because, you know, we got Culligan's Command and Culligan. And that was all these great cards. I think someone was like, you should probably play it anyway. Cause it's got you on it. And I'm just like, but no one would play it. It would just be bad. And it would just be not good. So I don't know. I really do hope that they make Tybalt actually good. I don't know if he has the baggage, because he certainly has, like, if you think Tybalt, the first thing you think of is like bad.
Terrible.
Yeah. Just like
garbage.
Yeah. Just like, and I think it was just like, you know, if they made it just like loot, not necessarily at random, then, you know, he probably would have been a lot better. But I think they were very scared of making him too pushed, especially since it was like a new boundary that they were trying with like a 2-mana planeswalker.
Yeah.
So they were like, well, we don't want to mess this up, so we're going to push it, but not, you know, well, we don't want to push it off too far to test this new boundary out. And yeah, they didn't really. So I don't know, maybe they'll... So they might actually, you know, try. I think hopefully they'll make him decent, or at least make.
I think he'll be good.
I'm pretty sure they'll probably try to make him juiced, or at least try to push him.
Was it they had the sketch and it was like the most consoling table. It's like, oh, that's all right, man. You're still the best 2-mana planeswalker they've ever printed. And then like Jace Ben's Prodigy walks in the door. They're like,
oh.
And he's like, he doesn't count.
I mean, I guess he's a creature. So it's like the planeswalker side costs 0 mana technically, right?
Yeah.
I guess being really technical.
All right. Let's wrap up here. I think we're good. A lot of fun. So it's been really sweet. But all right, this brings us to the conclusion of our episode. We'd like to thank our guest, Usman Jamil for coming on the show. Where can they find you if you wanna they wanna learn some more about what you've done or possibly hear some more?
Oh, gotcha. So I've most of my current Magic content, at least in terms of articles, is on Gathering Magic. I used to write for Star City, StarCityGames.com. I wrote for them for a couple of years. I'd say maybe about 3 years. I forget how long. At least it was several years. And I've written a bunch of articles there. But yeah, mainly Gathering Magic is where a lot of Cube stuff has been lately. And mainly just been set reviews, honestly. I haven't done a lot of, like, design articles. I've been meaning to get back on that. I don't know if wagon's quite the right word. It probably isn't. But just get back on that, and I just really haven't. But it's one of those things that I've just had some ideas kind of brewing that eventually I'm going to start doing. But mainly just, like, set reviews. But I mainly do a lot of tweeting at Usman the Rad on Twitter. I have a blog that I never update, honestly, at idratherbecubing.wordpress.com because, let's be honest, I pretty much just post crack-a-packs on it, and that's really it. It's just crack effects. And then the podcast The Third Power at MTGcast. I don't know, forget if it's anywhere else like on iTunes or something, but pretty much just like as far as I know it's on MTGcast.
It is on iTunes. Yeah, you can find it there.
Nice. So it's on there.
Sweet. Well, we had a great time here. I was definitely very interested in hearing everything that you said. I apologize for my blabbering. I've been kind of off tonight for some reason. I don't know why.
I was about to say, I don't know how you're complaining about blabbering, considering I've just been nonstop, just like nonsense. And be like,
no worries. Well, my name is Zakeel Gordon. You can find me on Twitter at Zakeel Gordon or on YouTube Merfolk Magic. And then, of course, I'm on Reddit and all that stuff all under the same username. And Drew, where can they find you?
Well, I'm Quad9s on Twitter. I also have a YouTube page, the number 9 on YouTube, and actually the 9 spelled out on Twitter. But yeah, I'm on there quite regularly and occasionally post videos on YouTube. So anytime you want to talk Cube or any kind of magic, just hit me up on there.
All right. Sweet. And this has been another episode of What's in the Box. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Oh, I forgot to say thank you for having me on.
Forgot
if I mentioned that earlier.
No, of course.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
I really appreciate it. You guys, have a good podcast.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you on. So.
Thank you.
See you guys next time.